with no empire left to hate. And they all started planting olive trees. After the
This is the Quality News Network. World leaders were unable to agree today on how to resolve the fighting between Israel and Hezbollah. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice objected to calling for an immediate ceasefire, saying it must be sustainable and that Lebanon cannot return to the status quo. But the leaders did agree that a United Nations-backed international force should be deployed to southern Lebanon. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan says Iran and Syria must be involved in resolving the crisis since they're the biggest sponsors of Hezbollah. In Iran, President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is calling for a ceasefire and demanding that Israel apologize for its actions. He also said Iran provides political and moral, but not military, support to Hezbollah. Meanwhile, dozens of guerrillas reportedly headed toward Lebanon today to join in the fighting. Iran says it will not send in regular troops, but will not try to stop volunteers. In Lebanon, the fighting between Israel and Hezbollah guerrillas is now in its 15th day. Today, Israeli warplanes destroyed the building that houses the offices of Hezbollah's commander. Reports also indicate that at least 8, possibly 14, Israeli soldiers were killed during today's fighting. In Israel, the military is investigating the deaths of 4 UN peacekeepers yesterday. A preliminary report says that UN observers called the Israeli military repeatedly over a 6-hour period, asking for an end to the airstrikes. The report says that each time, an Israeli official promised the bombing would stop. In Baghdad today, an Iraqi official said gunmen posing as police officers kidnapped 17 people, including women and children. Democrats are now pushing for new intelligence in Iraq, saying the existing information is outdated. Across California, the heat wave that has brought triple-digit temperatures continues into its 11th day. Officials say at least 56 deaths could be attributed to the heat. They're calling for energy conservation. Meanwhile, power has been restored to tens of thousands of residents in Queens, New York, after a 10-day-long blackout. In Washington, the state Supreme Court upheld the 1998 Defense of Marriage Act. It limits marriage to a man and a woman. An Ohio Supreme Court ruled against a Cincinnati suburb that wanted to use eminent domain for a multi-million dollar commercial project. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The House is expected to vote soon on a bill that would roll back estate taxes and extend tax breaks for businesses, education, and research. A vote is expected this week. The Securities and Exchange Commission voted today to require more disclosure about executives' pay and perks, as well as the dating of options. It's the biggest change since 1992. The Senate is expected to begin debating soon over whether to open 8 million acres of the Gulf of Mexico to oil and gas drilling. A final vote could come this week. GlaxoSmithKline says it could produce hundreds of millions of bird flu vaccine next year. The company says the vaccine still needs regulatory approval. Two physicians are helping Microsoft develop software geared toward the healthcare industry. As hospitals and patient records go digital, the healthcare information technology field is seen as an opportunity for growth and profits. This year, China is expected to replace Japan as America's third largest export market. A U.S. trade official says U.S. exports to China rose 36.5% between January and June over the same time frame last year. And Boeing reports it lost $160 million in the second quarter. That's the first loss in 3 years. Light sweet crude settled at $73.94 today. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 1 point, NASDAQ down 3 points, S&P 500 flat. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. La 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 la. Rubber baby buggy bumpers, rubber baby buggy bumpers. She sells seashells at the seashore. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers, and Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. How many pickled peppers did Peter Piper pick? See, okay, I lost my voice screaming last night. I'm back and I'm in rare form because, after all, it's not just any old night here on Head On. No, it's Wednesday, and you know what that means.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Yepers, it's prayer meeting edition. Get your Bibles out. Get your stories of the religious weirdos. All gathered together. Bring something to the table. I've got a bunch, including sleazy convicted Baptists in Arizona, busted for running a Ponzi scheme that was actually done within the aegis of the state Baptist organization. Millions and millions of dollars were bilked away from the faithful and, shall we say, less than rocket scientists. And still their legal counsel says they didn't understand this was a godly effort. They could have paid the money back. So there's that, and of course other things going on in the news today. Did you catch the Washington Post article a couple of days ago about the anonymous Republican who said that being called a Republican was a scarlet letter? Well, he's been outed. We now know who a prominent Republican in a tightly contested Senate race, and we won't tell you where. Thanks, Washington Post. But the guy has admitted that it's having George Bush to come and campaign for him. No, not so much. But that's okay, because we know where dear leader is right now. Don't we? Sure we do. Even as we speak, dear leader is sitting down to a rubber chicken dinner in Charleston, West by God, Virginia, hoping to motivate the mouth breathers one more time to put Archmore's daughter, you know, Archmore, the sleaziest, dirtiest, most rotten, filthy governor who has ever had anything to do with the state of West Virginia, put Archmore's daughter, send her back to the Congress. You know, Shelley Moore Capito. Arch in a bad wig. Tom DeLay's best gal. Took more sleazy money from Tom DeLay than any other Congress critter except for one. And who was that one? What was that? Was that John Boehner? B-O-E-H-N-E-R, dear, boner. Oh, I'm sorry, he says it's Boehner. There's an O there and there's an E there. He can either be boner or beaner. There's no A. So, dear leader, $4,200 a couple. $4,200 a couple. So that West Virginia Republicans can go ahead and hate America a little bit more and stick the shiv a little further deeper into the viscera of the American body politic by sending Shelley Moore Capito back to the Congress. Well, if I've got anything to do with it, that won't happen. If I've got anything to do with that, I will continue to tell you about Mike Callahan, my friend Mike Callahan, who is the Democratic nominee for the 2nd District Congressional seat from West Virginia. MikeWV.com, CallahanForCongress.com, CallaghaN. And just so you'll know, I'm not getting paid to do this. This is not a paid political announcement. I don't know if Mike even knows that I'm doing this for him. But we have got to nationalize Mike's campaign. Can you, you know, I'm sorry, you know, I don't like to give marching orders. I don't like to ask you to do stuff. But if you're involved with Democratic groups, if you're involved with people who follow the political process, who are actively engaged in doing everything humanly possible to take back America from the Republicans in November of this year, could you do us a favor here in West Virginia? Mike needs your help. He needs your notice. He needs your money. He needs your good words. Because at $4,200 a plate, here's the dirty little secret out of West Virginia. The West Virginia Republicans lined up for those $4,200 rubber chicken and frozen broccoli dinners. Because there is still a weird little knot of people, a cancer upon the American nation that supports that heinous little jug-eared, pig-eyed lout at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue who chews with his mouth open, gropes German chancellors, and swears like a drunken sailor. And it's going to take every single seat we can get to wrest the House of Representatives back from the brink of despair and destruction and put it in the hands of saner people. Mike Callahan is part of the solution, not part of the problem. MikeWV.com. CallahanForCongress.com. They're having a people's dinner tonight in Charleston as well. Instead of $4,200 a plate, I think it's $21 to attend a much more festive affair of much less uptight, much less creepy people. So if you've got a few bucks to contribute to Mike's campaign, please do. I know everybody's got their hand out. But we need Shelley Moore to go home, take off the bad wig, and go hang out with Daddy or something. They can compare notes on how much money they got from big energy interests, because her daddy Arch was notorious for extorting money from coal companies. And of course, Shelley's gotten her fair share of coal company money, too. Only thing is, she didn't have to extort it. She just held her hand out. And then she kept holding her hand out and took lots of dirty money from Tom DeLay. Shoot him an email over at Mike Callahan's campaign. Tell him that you heard about him on this program and that you're behind him. And that you understand how important it is to get the 2nd District back in Democratic hands. We would sincerely, I would appreciate that. God knows Mike would appreciate that. Because right now Mike is pretty much fighting the fight on his own. He's a great lawyer. He's a brilliant mind. He is a hard, hard, dedicated worker. And frankly, he will be miles ahead of Shelley Moore the first day that he steps into the House of Representatives than she is after this, her third term. So, you know, let Mike know you've heard about him. Let him know that you think his race is important. Now, later on this evening, we will be having a conversation with our good friend Rick Goodner, who is a real, live, honest-to-goodness psychologist, author of The Fox Syndrome, Right-Wing Media-Induced Shared Psychotic Disorder. And we're going to put George W. Bush on the couch. We're going to talk about some of his behavior. And we're going to apply legitimate diagnostic data to George Bush and see if we can't come up with a formal diagnosis of just what is wrong with this pig-eyed, jug-eared lout. So I'm looking forward to that. I hope you are as well. We've got an entire prayer meeting edition ahead of us. Bring to the altar whatever you wish to share. The phone number is 877-443-2366. 877-4, head on. Email comes to bob@headonradio.com. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Your own personal Jesus. Someone to hear your prayers. Someone who cares. Your own personal Jesus. Someone to hear your prayers. Someone who's there.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
The president came out and talked about the Iraq war and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye, baby, by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool block skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
God forgive our warring ways. Blessed is the peace we'll make. When someday we walk like Him, God forgive our warring ways. Jesus tried to give us sight, for to see wrong from right. Jesus tried, but Jesus failed. God forgive our warring ways. Bless the poorest of the poor, sea to sea and door to door. Let the millionaires atone. God forgive our warring ways.
20 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob. This is Head On. And that is a fellow native Alabamian, Will Kimbrough, from a brand new album that is, it'll make the little hairs stand up on the back of your neck. The name of the album is Americanitis. And I haven't heard anything. I will play some more cuts from it this evening because it is profound. It is profound. Let's go to the phones. Jim joins us from a remote, undisclosed location. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing well, sir. Yourself?
Well, yeah, doing okay. It's the wicked witch of the north. Here it is again.
I
tell you, the news is just kind of appalling for over there. As a matter of fact, I'm sticking my teeth into a biography of Queen Mary by James Pope Hennessy. At least it's innocuous, you know?
Yeah.
A kinder, gentler, more elegant time. You know, I was just talking to Bruce Birch this afternoon, with him, rather. And, you know, we're talking about, I think, Ahmadinejad and some of the Pat Robertson and some of these people. You know, I honestly think that I could probably get more sense out of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, considering the way his country has been treated. And the, what can I say, the background between Iran and this country. I mean, I can understand why these people are very angry.
Absolutely.
And I think that a lot of the Iranians are not crazy jihadists. I think they just want to live their lives in peace. And let
Jim,
get back to normal. And I think that we have people over in this country who, in my opinion, are much more radical than they are.
Sure we do. D. James Kennedy, James Dobson, Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, they are all dangerous homicidal maniacs. The Reverend Donald Wildman, the same thing.
Well, these guys are empire builders, Bob, and that's what they've done. And they've built an empire of fear, and they built an empire of ignorance is what they've done. And they're trying to delve into things which are way above their pay grade, I can assure you, way above their pay grade. One day they're going to answer for it, I can tell you that.
Well, but it's what they're doing to ordinary people on the ground. You know, they use these poor ignorant right wing followers as shock troops, as cannon fodder in the culture wars.
Well, that will endure but for a season, I can assure you, and then it will be cut down and dealt with accordingly. That's for sure. That's my firm belief. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I am not wrong.
Well, the sooner they're cut down, the better, as far as I'm concerned, Jim.
Well, yeah, absolutely, and as far as I'm concerned, you know, we were talking today about the old Mackinder-Haushofer Heartland Theory. Remember that?
Help me a little.
Well, you know, Rudolf Hess, Hitler's deputy, was a devotee of Professor Haushofer, and he was a geopolitician. And there was an Englishman who had the same type of doctrine. It was about the heartland of Eurasia, which almost centers by where Iran is right now.
Sure. The Caucasus Mountains area.
He
kind of
controls the heartland, controls the world. And, you know, I think part of that's coming back into the minds of certain people in D.C. I really think that. Maybe I'm just being totally wrong and totally wet, and if I am, I'll take a bath for it. But, you know, it just seems to me that they are interested in that part of the world very, very, very much, not only because of its resources, but because of its central position. And it goes back to Mackinder and Haushofer.
Well, but there's also, I understand what you're talking about now, Jim, but in the now, in the present, we know certain things about Iran. We know them because they're not, it's not secret information. The majority of their population is under the age of 30.
Right.
The majority of their population would like to have a pair of blue jeans. They would like to be able to walk in the streets, boyfriend and girlfriend, holding hands and looking lovingly at one another without having some freak with a whip in one hand and a Quran in the other beating the snot out of them for it.
Well, that's my point. I mean, you know, they've had a rough go of it. First, they had the closest they've had to anything decent was back in the 50s, and our CIA took care of that when we installed the Shah and his secret police, the SAVAK, or whatever it was called.
Yeah, the SAVAK.
All right, just the equivalent of Saddam's Mukhabarat. And then, you know, after that, they had Khomeini and a theocratic state. And, you know, I think these people are much more amenable to reason than our leaders would have us think they are.
There is probably a lot of truth in that, Jim. The question remains, and so far the people in our State Department have failed the test. The question is, how do you have that dialogue with them?
Well, you sure don't get it by sending Miss Toxic Shock Syndrome over there to do it.
No, you don't. And you don't do it by...
That's her new name. That is her new sobriquet, Miss Toxic Shock Syndrome.
Well, you know, she certainly has had that effect with this latest... You know, she went over to Beirut just long enough to make sure that there couldn't be a peace process.
Exactly.
She was sent over there to make sure that no ceasefire took place.
Process.
Yeah. But as far as the youth of Iran is concerned, they want to. I've followed them with some interest. They want to blog. They want to have free and unfettered access to the internet. They like to listen to hip hop and rock and roll.
Some quality as well as quantity of life. Because I don't think all of them buying off from that business of 70 virgins, you know?
Yeah, but if there is one way to make sure that they do, the one way that we can make sure that we make enemies out of all of those young people who would like to drink a Coke, you know, for God's sakes, the one way we can make enemies out of all those people is by attacking their government and giving them a rallying point.
I know. But, you know, Mr. Ahmadinejad seems like a person who does have moments of lucidity.
I think he's a very calculating man. Jim, I would suggest, after the phone call, go to GregPalast.com, and read Greg's latest article, and it's absolutely fascinating. You'll be glad you did. What he says is... The title of the article is Blood in Beirut, $75.05 a barrel.
Okay.
And the point that he makes is that George Bush controls Israel. George Bush could stop this fighting with a phone call. George Bush hasn't. Hamas.
George Bush will.
Hamas is controlled by Saudi Arabia. King Abdullah could stop the fighting with a phone call. He hasn't. Ahmadinejad and Iran control Hezbollah. They could stop this fighting with a phone call. They haven't. And the thing that those three have in common is that, you know, there's no oil in Lebanon. There's no oil in Israel. But all of this unrest, all of this unease has driven the price of oil through the roof. $75 a barrel today. We're paying $2.99 and up per gallon at the pump because of the agony in Beirut and in Haifa and in Tyre and in Accra, you know, in Israel and Lebanon. It's driving the price of oil up. Who benefits from it, Jim?
You know, and I know who benefits.
Ahmadinejad benefits from it. King Abdullah benefits from it. George Bush benefits from it.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right. And, you
don't
know,
well, don't credit me. That's Greg Palast. I mean, he's a smart man.
Well, I mean, what you say is correct, and what he says is correct. And, you know, I certainly have the same opinion. I wish you'd have heard the guy who called your old friend this morning, who was an independent businessman, and he basically said, I don't think you're a friend of business at all. You say you are, but I don't think you are. And they had quite an interesting exchange this morning.
Blistered him, did he?
A little bit. Sure did.
Well, good. But I think that, you know.
He was hoisted on his own petard this morning.
I don't know if I can handle petards in the morning, Jim.
No, I mean, he was.
I understand.
He was. He really was. Because, I mean, you know, the guy said, look, I'm paying upwards of $3 a gallon of gas, and, you know, you people are making $7 an hour, and you have to pay $3 for a gallon of gas in your car to go how many miles, and, you know, where is it going to get you? It's the trip to nowhere.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you, and that is the calculus that is going to start happening with more frequency in this country. I mean, think about it. A guy making minimum wage has to work for more than 2 hours, assuming that he drives a vehicle that makes 20 miles a gallon. He's got to work for 2 hours to be able to drive 40 miles.
Well, you know, I think what they envisioned for most of the other people except themselves is this. A daymare, a nightmare, a trip to nowhere. And that's exactly what they want.
And they laugh all the way to the bank, Jim.
And on that note, I'm going to leave you.
All right. Thank you so much, Jim. Have yourself a wonderful evening. Go read that article.
I'll do that tomorrow when I can really come back online, okay?
All right. Blood in Beirut, $75.05 a barrel.
All right. Out here.
Take care, Jim. Bye now. Everybody else, if you haven't seen this, go see it. GregPalast.com. PALAST. And the points are made one by one, and it's a devastating little analysis. He notes that oil prices are up 27% from a year ago. Exxon's second quarter profits may bust records. Next quarter should put it to shame, as the Lebanon premium and Iraq's insurgency have puffed up prices by an average of 11% in the last 3 months alone. He says, we're trained to think of Middle Eastern conflicts as just modern flare-ups of ancient tribal animosities. But to uncover why the flames won't die, the usual rule applies. Follow the money. Cherchez l'argent. And he's right. So we'll take a break, and we'll come back, more of your phone calls if you feel so, well, if the spirit moves you. 877-443-2366. Bob@headonradio.com. That's how you reach us with email. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Place on the web you can go where everything is so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there working hard for you every day. It's a place where you can go to raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. DUBYAD40.com. So stop on by. The 101st Fighting Keyboardists of Kansas are ready to hear your opinion. There are topics of news, current events, and great humor. So let Clyde, Wally, and Dookie know that you're a working person too. WD40.com. Stop on by.
Hello, this is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
You can see that in Alberta, diversity is very strong. You see people from different places, from different backgrounds, and we all have learned to live together. That's why Alberta is a great place to live.
We come from different places, and we have to accept each other because our backgrounds are different, our cultures are different, and we have to understand other people.
I think that our community, being as open as it is, just gives people a chance to really enjoy interaction between different cultures and really get to know each other without making any judgments.
Trabajando juntos podemos lograr la gran diferencia en la comunidad. That it means by working together we can make a big difference in our community.
To find out how you can make a difference, visit helpmakeadifference.com. This message is brought to you by the Government of Alberta and Global Television.
Of the richest people in the land. Don't you understand? I don't give a damn for you. I don't give a damn for you. That's the truth. I lie because I can. It's not stealing if it's legal. Let's just change the rules. Besides, it's middle management's fault. If they can't cook my books right, they're fired. They're fools. Let them be the
man. I'm telling you, this is some stuff. If you're interested, you can go to willkimbrough.com. willkimbrough. willkimbrough.com, and the disc is for sale there. Americanitis. By Will Kimbrough. Shucks, let's see. There's contact link. Drop him an email. Tell him you heard about him on Head On with Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network. Look, artists love to know they're getting heard, right? Right. And this is just gonna. I'm telling you, you're gonna. Oh, Bob was right about that one. Yeah. Let's go to the phones. Andy joins us from the UK. Andy, welcome to the program.
Hey, man, how's it going?
Going well. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. I was inspired to call in with your conversation between yourself and Jim to point out that, yes, Greg is right, and he's only really saying what people like Noam Chomsky and Michael Parenti and Karl Marx happened to say in the past. And the reason Jim came to that conclusion, because, he mentioned he kind of realized that was what it was about, Ahmadinejad. You know, price of oil going down, Ahmadinejad talks about nukes or shouts about Israel.
Price goes up.
Going down, George Bush rattles the saber at Syria or Iran. That feeling Jim had that was why is because we all know we're being ripped off. It's just they work so hard at keeping it covered up a lot of the time that it's difficult to constantly remember that it's all a con. Our government, your government, my government, all the so-called civilized, free and democratic governments, they are not free or democratic governments. We don't have a truly free choice. Even in the best ones, you have Category A and Category B and Category C of basically the same blend.
Yeah.
All politics is centre to right wing. There is no left wing real politics in the so-called civilized world.
Maybe in South America.
No, well, that's it. South America isn't considered the civilized world by the so-called civilized people. And you notice I'm saying so.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I personally agree with it.
Sorry, I missed your qualifier, Andy. But
South America has no other option, and it's been trying so long. And now it can do it because, first of all, Venezuela's under control, and that was always the key to South America, because Venezuela's the oil power in South America. Now that's going left-wing. It doesn't really matter too much what the other ones do, because generally the left-wing people in South America are going to get the breather they need now, especially with America being as weak as it is. I mean, can you really finance a couple of wars in South America as well as all this?
No, sorry, can't. No.
I mean, you know, even if you're fighting them through auxiliaries, and remember the Romans used auxiliaries, find some right-wing fascist Gauls and use them against the other Gauls. The Americans have done that in Ecuador and Paraguay and, Uruguay, Brazil, Chile.
But it didn't stick.
Venezuela.
It didn't stick, Andy.
Well, that's the thing. The people now know. You know, I mean, most of the people in South America, I've got one of my housemates, from last year, had a Brazilian boyfriend. You know, I only spoke to him for a couple of hours, and he knew people from, you know, his friends, his members of his friend's family, his family, churchmen, nurses, nuns. All these people have been eliminated by fascist right-wingers, all in the name of so-called defending of democracy.
Yeah, that's what the School of the Americas is about. That's what Reagan's war against the poor people in El Salvador was about.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, the problem is people kind of keep thinking, oh, well, you know, people warned us about the military-industrial complex. Maybe we didn't listen. Well, the problem is that America's been an imperial power for a lot longer than that. I mean, Cuba?
Well, sure. About the turn of the 20th century was when our imperial ambitions really came to flower.
Yeah, 1898 you invaded Cuba, I believe, and in 1904 you said to the Cubans, well, you can have your independence, and you can have a flag that's going to be red, white, and blue, and you can mint your own coins, and you can have any socially acceptable Cuban that we agree with on them. And, you can look after all your internal things, you know, you have to pay for your schools and so forth. And all we're going to do, because it doesn't look good as having colonies, we're a republic, all we're going to do is we're going to control all your foreign exports, all your sugar, all your tobacco, whatever's worth anything.
Well, that's why it becomes imperative to try to ramrod a SAFTA down their throat.
But this is exactly what, you know, the same thing is being played out again and again and again. And, you know, I mean, Tony Blair and the British government are obviously complicit. And, I mean, to be quite frank, Bob, you, me, Jim, and everybody else who talks about this put ourselves in quite great danger. Because these fascists will stop at nothing, and they might come for us in the night.
Well, I heard, I heard from a new listener yesterday afternoon, mm-hmm. and it gave me cold chills because he called in and he said, I thought they killed off the last of your kind a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I said, no, sir, I'm still here. He said, well, I imagine you go around to the bodyguard. I said, nothing more than a 45.
Mm.
And but you're right. You're right. If it gets hot enough, they'll start.
Well, that's it. And, you know, I mean,
but we can't let ourselves be run away by that by that possibility, Andy.
No, not at all. And I don't advocate that in the slightest. But what we have to do is we have to accept the fact that one day we might wake up with guns being pointed in our faces, and, you know, it might all be over from then on in. But we have to work no matter what. And you know, don't believe for a minute that your government wants to protect you. I mean, how much effort has your government, let's say, made to protect you over, well, all this coal business and those little kids in the school?
Oh, hell no.
No, but they've made a great deal of effort to protect great corporations that are causing the problem, trying to break the EPA laws. You know, these people literally...
Sure, I mean, you know, we talk a lot about southern United States issues here, Andy. How hard, you know, all these we got to protect you from the terrorists, southern lawmakers. How many, you know, Dennis Kucinich said it best. He said hunger is a weapon of mass destruction.
Mm. Well, you know, we know what the real facts are. Let's face it. If Israel didn't want to be attacked by angry ex-Palestinians in living in Lebanon, or angry Palestinians living in inside occupied Palestine, they wouldn't suppress them and oppress them and use them as a source of slave labor to keep wages down. Generally, they would provide them with food and hospitals and jobs and schools and education, and then the people wouldn't take up guns, and there'd be a joint Israeli-Palestinian government with equal numbers or unequal numbers, and it wouldn't matter in the parliament. The fact is, Israel doesn't want to do that because it's economically advantageous to have a pool of slave labor. Now, they're not.
Well, it's economically advantageous, Andy, to have that $3 billion faucet running from Washington, D.C. to Tel Aviv.
Well, absolutely.
Because if they're at peace, there's no need for us to send all that money.
Well, no, not at all. And you know, it's the double whammy. They keep the area on edge. Oil prices stay high. Oil companies are happy. America keeps giving them money. They keep the area on edge. They keep if the area's on edge and they have the Palestinians oppressed, well, they can make a fast buck off of using the Palestinians as effectively slave labor. I don't blame Israelis. I don't blame Israelis to stand there screaming for my death as an anti-Zionist. You know, at worst, those crazed ones are simply uninformed and ignorant and stupid and dangerous. And at best, the Israelis think like I do. They think their government's fascist and totalitarian in nature. And it's not the Israeli government's fault, because they copy the Western form of apparent democracy. We don't have democracy. You guys definitely don't have democracy. At least over here, we can actually petition the House of Lords and the judges and have the bums thrown out. As for you lot, well, you know, if they decide a state isn't democratic this time, they just give the Electoral College votes away. Don't worry about the devolved machines. Don't worry about any of that. All they have to do is have the right people in the right places, and they can hand elections to whoever they want. It's happened so many times in your past.
Yeah.
And generally, the person who got handed to started a war.
They do come in handy, Andy.
Well, they come in handy because they make lots of money for the interests that put them in power.
Well, I've been working on something, and I'll put it on paper eventually and turn it into an essay. But I've got this notion running around in my brain, Andy. No people who engage in warfare can call themselves a free people.
Yeah, effectively. I mean, well, you know, engage in offensive warfare. And, you know, I'd argue that the Swiss can call themselves a free people for quite a long time, although they've had a few skirmishes back in the past. I mean, it hasn't happened for a long time now. But they were free even then because they were relatively democratic and non-autocratic. But yeah, you're right. Any country that practices any kind of aggression, that overtly or with their secret services, anything apart from internal security and defense, you know, you're not a free people. You're a war nation. I mean, look at Sweden. Okay, Sweden has some of the highest quality weapon systems in the world, and they don't sell them to anyone, and they don't buy weapons from anyone, and they're strictly neutral. And that's the way they operate. Do you know what I mean?
I do. I understand everything you're saying, Andy.
They simply build enough for their own defense. Anybody who attacks Sweden's in for a nasty shock, and, you know, they train pretty much huge numbers of people to fight in the mountains as guerrillas, and that's their strategy. Because they've got Russia as their main enemy.
Right.
And, you know, the only thing you can do is hide in the mountains and harass them until they leave. Everyone knows that in Afghanistan.
Well, you know, and the Swiss.
Well, the Swiss, exactly the same thing. You know, everybody's under arms if necessary.
And
tangle with that.
Right, exactly. So, you know, consequently, a nation that turns its attentions toward so-called national security, wages offensive war. A terrified people is not a free people, Andy.
No, well, you know, look at the number of times the United States has either sanctioned or turned a blind eye to the killing of anybody who opposed the right-wing regimes it supports. I mean, I can't even sit here and list them. I mean, you know, pick anywhere in South America and you've done it there. Pick anywhere in Central America and a few places in the Caribbean, you've done it there. Pick a whole bunch of places in South Asia, you've done it there. Economically, you do it to all the other Western states. The Middle East, well, need I say more? How long has America been assassinating people and installing governments there? You know, the CIA and the FBI and the NSA, they don't exist to serve the national interest of America. They exist to serve the national interest of themselves.
It's, yeah, it's self-perpetuating. Everything that the authors of the Declaration of Independence and the framers of the Constitution complained about in a government has more or less been, that's what this government has morphed into. I don't have any problem saying this is fascism.
No, well, it is. It's fascism. That's it, pure and simple. And people will go, you're using comparisons to Hitler. Wrong.
No. No, comparisons to Hitler. That's Congressman Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma, who said that people who are worried about global warming are Nazis. He said that. He said it in the last couple of days, Andy.
Yeah, well, the guy's just an utter moron.
Yeah, I know, and move on. But
I mean, I wouldn't even say and move on. I would kind of say just send him an email saying, you, sir, with the greatest respect, are a moron. Please keep your mouth shut in future and stop embarrassing the American public.
Well, there's only one problem, though, Andy. He's only embarrassing half of the American public. I don't know if he
embarrasses all of you.
I don't know if you... No, because half of the public... Yeah, that's right.
No, they don't know they're embarrassed. That doesn't mean they're not embarrassed.
Oh, okay, sort of a platonic embarrassment, then?
Well, you know, they're just embarrassed. It means that whenever they try and look somebody in the eye, like a European... they're going to make their statement, and the Europeans going to go, I understand. You're one of those. And that's it, the end of the conversation. But, we've got to understand that the Democrats are not necessarily the answer. Now, there are Democrats, especially these newer ones that are fighting, that they've got no connection to the security state, especially the ones who aren't rich. I would say this. You can't trust anyone until you know you can trust them. But it's very rare you can trust someone who's rich.
I understand that, but we have this ugly little two-party system that there's almost nothing we can do about.
No, but that's why you have these new guys. I mean, the guy you were talking about, I'm sorry, I forget his name, that's challenging what...
Mike Callahan, sure.
Yeah, and others like him. I mean, there was, there's all those ex-servicemen and women and so forth that are challenging. Now, those people are actually a real hope for America. Because if you can get them into power, basically, you know, I can't see a bunch of CIA spooks freaking out some ex-Marines or ex-whatever your paratroopers are called, you know, 101st or whatever.
Yeah.
I can't see someone who's, like, had bullets whizzing past his head being intimidated by some idiot in a suit with a gat. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I can see a proper future coming if you can get just enough of these people in. And you don't even have to win the presidency this time round. I'm telling you.
No, we've got to have the Congress, Andy. And that's...
We've got to have the Congress. But I'm telling you, you're probably not even going to take the Congress or the House this time round either, because the machines are in place. You have to get in positions where you can move those machines out of the vote.
Well, that movement is slowly building in the United
States. It is,
States.
And that's what
it's getting some legs.
That's what you need to go for. Because, I mean, you know, I want you to have a Democratic president, a Democratic House, a Democratic Senate, and for some miraculous accident to happen to a bunch of right-wing judges and have a Democratic Supreme Court. It's not going to happen. You might get one. Might get two.
I've got to maintain my faith. And shame on me for engaging in faith. But there's plenty of stuff to get depressed out there.
There's no shame on you for engaging in faith, and there is lots of stuff to be depressed out. But remember, like Michael Parenti says, you've got to be pessimistic of thought and optimistic of action. So just assume the worst is going to happen and then carry on regardless.
Well, I think that's really our only choice, isn't it?
It is. He's right. I mean, you know, I heard him. I've got these speeches I listen to of his, and it goes back to the 90s and 80s and stuff. And the stuff he's saying there, talking about George Bush, and he's talking about senior, you could just transpose the whole speech right up to 2005, 10 years into the future, and it worked. Exactly worked. You know, the looping of history is becoming faster and faster and more extreme. And We can only hope it's the end of capitalism as we know it.
Well, I don't know.
And stop saying the end of civilization as we know it whenever people talk about Armageddon. Armageddon is more likely to be the end of capitalism as we know it.
I mean, the way it's posited, Armageddon it's not civilization. It's just the end of everything. And that's what these people are looking toward.
Well, religious Armageddon was the end times happened when Christ died. That was the official...
When Titus in 70 A.D. came into Jerusalem and literally leveled the place and ran everybody out and said...
That was the end time.
That's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, let's remember that the fables are just that, fables, and they are very interesting for what they tell us about human socio-cultural significance, but they are just that, fables, you know? I mean, they were a bunch of oral traditions that came from Zoroaster, and they got transmorphed by a bunch of people that lived across the Babylonian area, and then they became the Jewish tales, and then they became the Christian, then they became the Muslim tales, and now there's the evangelicals who have their own twist. You know, it's all an oral tradition that's been twisted and written down and morphed and just...
And, you know, the sad thing is there might have originally been some meaning to it.
Well, there is. You can look at the core meaning, which is be nice to people if you expect them to be nice back.
I mean, and rules for how to live in the desert and not die.
Well, you know, I mean, there was a lot of stuff that was... I mean, look at the sort of the Greek oral traditions that were written down, the epics and all that, and look at the sort of moral, you know, things in that. Now, we don't agree with some of the things that maybe Odysseus or Hercules did, but there are moral tales in those, and that's what they were. Now, the Bible is that. It's just been written down and codified, and the Catholic Church put a lot of effort into, like, killing people who don't agree with it.
Yeah.
You know, we could have a Bible based on the tales of the demigods instead of the tales...
Well, just as a for instance, I've mentioned a couple of times, Andy, this article I read a couple of weeks ago on the back of the science page or whatever in the Sunday paper. This statistician and this sociologist, anthropologist, whatever the heck
connection.
He is. And the idea, and I mean, they worked out the numbers, and, you know, numbers don't lie. We go back 5,000 years in the family tree, and we'll find a common ancestor, and that's for every single person on the planet right now, 5,000 years.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's apparently a bit of dispute about the number of years back, but it's between five. I think the papers all took the shortest, and I think the guy actually came up with a figure between 5 and 10.
Yeah, well, the paper even said 3, but anywhere between 3 and 10, and yeah. Suddenly the tribal maunderings...
Yeah.
About, you know, where the Earth is only 5,000 years old begins to make a little bit of sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it gets codified within the myth.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
it's,
you know,
code.
We are all totally connected, and the fact that we spend a lot of time fighting each other is nothing to do with this nonsense of human nature. Oh, it's human nature for the Palestinians and the Israelis to kill each other. It's human nature for the Arabs to hate the Persians and the Christians to hate the Jews and the Muslims. It's not. It's not at all. Those are aspects of things that humans do. But, you know, for every war or for every act of violence, there's an act of love. So let's move on from this idiot excusing whatever we do as saying, oh, it's human nature. Because it's not. And we don't have any, you know, need for war. Why, if we did, why wouldn't we be happy with war? There's very few people who actually enjoy war. The people who make money out of it and a couple of psychos. The rest of us all find it horrendous.
It's those couple of psychos. Andy, it's the psychos.
Well, but at the moment we have the problem that the psychos are the ones who are making the money out of it.
Well, I think we're going to be having that conversation about 15 minutes from now when Rick Goodner comes along. It should be enjoyable. Right now we've got to go for the news, though, Andy.
Cool, man. No worries. We'll take care.
All right. Have a great morning.
You too, man.
Bye now. We'll be back with more phone calls, and then also coming up in this hour, in the coming hour, Rick Goodner, author of The Fox Syndrome. We're just going to lead little George by the hand over to the couch and talk about some of that creepy Oedipal stuff and God only knows what else, and find out, you know, why it is he has more in common with Jeffrey Dahmer than he does with Abraham Lincoln, as Republicans go. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
There's no power in pride. My pride will take you down every time. How did the World Trade Center and the Pentagon getting all blown to hell make somebody feel the need to print up 10 or 15 million Power of Pride stickers?
Well, sure, there's the profit angle. I know some creep made millions off What Would Jesus Do? I like those Who Would Jesus Bomb lapel pins. When did pride get crossed off the list of deadly sins? Or was that just another law passed by some old men back in the first century A.D. to keep the people in their place? There's no power in pride. Pride is a man who goes to war to save face. Pride is a man who cannot tell the truth that might make him look weak. There's no power in pride. Our sin is pride, and we know it. We just can't bear to talk about it. We paste those stickers right next to the Jesus fish we bought down at the Christian store. I'm not bashing Jesus, but how about we read what Jesus said for once? I say for balance, we take in a little Buddha and Johnny Cash.
This is the Quality News Network. U.S. and European officials met in Rome today to talk about the Israel-Hezbollah conflict. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice says they agreed to send a U.N.-backed international force to southern Lebanon and to continue sending humanitarian aid. The officials also agreed that the violence needs to end, but disagreed on how that should be accomplished. While many wanted an immediate ceasefire, Rice objected, saying that would not lead to a sustainable peace. In Lebanon, the fighting is now in its 15th day. Reports indicate that up to 14 Israeli soldiers were killed during today's fighting, Israel's biggest loss since the offensive began. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert says the military will continue working to establish an approximately one-mile-wide buffer zone in southern Lebanon. In the Gaza Strip, 23 Palestinians were killed today in Israeli strikes. At least a dozen militants are among the dead, as well as a three-year-old girl. It was the deadliest day of fighting since Israel's withdrawal from the area last year. In Jerusalem, former Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon was taken to a Tel Aviv hospital today to undergo kidney dialysis. Earlier this week, officials said his condition was deteriorating. He's been in a coma since suffering a massive stroke in January. On Capitol Hill today, Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki told Congress that Iraq is a front line in the war on terror. He said it's a battle between followers of true Islam and those who want to pervert the religion for their own gain. He asked for continued U.S. military support to help end the violence between the two factions. Yesterday, President Bush said more U.S. forces would be sent into Baghdad from other parts of Iraq. Also in Iraq, Saddam Hussein ended his hunger strike and appeared in court today for closing arguments in his war crimes trial. He said that if he's convicted, he'd rather be killed by firing squad than by hanging. In Moscow, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez is expected to sign a deal to acquire 24 Russian fighter jets. He also hopes to get a license allowing the construction of a Kalashnikov assault rifle factory in Venezuela. In Vail, Colorado, former President Gerald Ford has been released from the hospital. His spokeswoman said he was briefly hospitalized after experiencing shortness of breath. Ford is 93 years old and the oldest living former president in the nation. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
The Securities and Exchange Commission voted today to require more disclosure about executives' pay and perks, as well as the dating of options. The House will vote on a measure that would roll back estate taxes and extend tax breaks for businesses, education, and research. The vote is expected to come this week. The Senate is expected to begin debating soon over opening up 8 million acres of the Gulf of Mexico to oil and gas drilling. A final vote could come later this week. Boeing reports it lost $160 million in the second quarter. The company blames a settlement with the Justice Department over its defense contracting. General Motors also reports a second quarter loss of just over $3 billion, due partly to its restructuring program. But GM also says sales were up 12%, causing its shares to rise. Honda reports that sales of its fuel-efficient cars raised its second-quarter profit to $1.22 billion. Honda plans to build more factories, including a sixth U.S. plant. ConocoPhillips reports rising oil prices lifted its second-quarter income by 65%. The $5.18 billion figure is above and beyond Wall Street expectations. Light sweet crude settled at $73.94 today. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 1 point at 11,103. NASDAQ down 3. S&P 500 was flat. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Alrighty then, 5.5 minutes after the hour, and we're going to go right to the phones because I've been violating the oath of conversation radio. I hate to keep people on hold. Let's go to David in Middle Tennessee. David, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Bob. Thank you, Bob. Let's tidy up a little detail that they just had on the news that I think, you know, can remind us all about where big business in bed with big government will get you. GMC just lost $100 million in a quarter, and then Honda had better sales and made a bunch of money, and Honda made a bunch of money selling hybrids and fuel-efficient automobiles, I think the statement was.
Yep.
And GMC actually had a pretty good day in the stock market because they only lost that $100 and some odd million, mostly because the sales of their recently revised Chevy Tahoe, one of the largest vehicles going except for the Hummer, sold a little better than anybody expected. So GMC keeps looking backward and putting money into laying people off so they can buy them out so they won't have to have them working for them so they can build more things in China. And the stock market kind of likes it. But Honda, with factories here, sells fuel-efficient hybrids and is making great money. Hello?
Yeah, memo to Detroit. You're screwing up.
Yeah. Phone's ringing. Take the call.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. I got a couple little tie-ins on W, and I go back to over a month ago. Condoleezza was trying to talk to Yuri or whoever the Russian was, and she doesn't recognize there's an open mic, so she's not paying attention.
I remember that well.
A couple of weeks ago, W pulled this thing just prior to groping a prime minister of a major European power. He lets go of the S-bomb after letting fly with what I think could be considered very important State Department information on how to approach worldwide diplomacy. And he's not paying enough attention to notice, oh, gee, there's a microphone open. You know, it's just a matter of time. If we don't do right by the election process this fall, and if we don't impeach him, and if we don't get him out of office, he's going to be sitting somewhere in 07, mark my words, and he's going to turn around to Blair or Brown, whoever comes after him. Yo, you know those
five divisions you gave us for Operation Pitchfork. Well, they're going to make it so wonderful to invade Iran. He's not paying attention. He doesn't have enough sense to know when to keep his stupid mouth shut. He's going to just, like, blab the big plan for the whole world to hear. Think about that. It will happen. He's not going to quit being stupid. He's not going to get over it.
No, I'm afraid. I'm afraid what he has is incurable.
No, there's no inoculation for it. But there may be. There may be just a little bit of hope, because the guys in the state of Tennessee's Republican primary, most closely linked to him, even though neither one, neither Mr. Bryant nor Mr. Hillary, will say a word about the Bush family in any of their ads. They're only trying to out anti-abortion each other, and they're only trying to out conserve each other.
And out anti-Hillary each other.
And out anti-Hillary each other, and anti, you know, they're trying to out, you know, to hell with Bill each other. Right now, Mr. Corker, the guy that was the mayor of Chattanooga, now, in my book, he's no prize either. He's a Republican. I'm not going to seek him out in a crowded room and think.
The lipstick doesn't make him any less of a pig.
Nope. Dress him up. They're still the same. But he's 12 to 14 points ahead of the other two by virtue of Tennessee going, wait a second, those other two, A, were in bed with Bush, and B, wait a second, they're both lobbyists. They're registered lobbyists. And state of Tennessee's Republicans are looking at those guys. At least they want a new pig. They're not willing to get
it. Harold Ford Jr. sits back quietly in Memphis.
You got it. Airing some really, really relatively positive commercials saying, I'm not any of those guys. Let's just see what happens in the fall, which is the whole tenor of the whole thing. And I'm really enjoying that because, I thought based on what my state had done previously, but none of the three of them, you know, as far as, I don't think you'd get any of them to even mention George W. Bush's name in a debate.
Well, it's the same thing with this guy in Maryland. You know, big splashy news article in the Washington Post about the anonymous Republican in a hotly contested race who said that being a Republican was the scarlet letter he was wearing. And that he wouldn't get, you know, he didn't want George Bush within 100 miles of him?
I heard a wonderful interview about that with one of the writers of that. And he says, you know, we did everything he asked us to do so that he could remain anonymous. But that guy asked that the group of reporters, and there was more than one. This wasn't like somebody went to somebody's house or there was a motel room somewhere. There were five reporters, and they did the interview in a restaurant. And before the meal was over, there were people walking by with notepads going, let's see, that guy's with that paper, that guy's with the same paper, that's the Republican from where he's from. And, you know, it was on the blogs before midnight that night.
Yeah.
Personally, I just think he had those guys going through that charade such that he could go back to Rove and say, well, you know, I had to express myself because my district wants me to, you know, doesn't want to even admit that George Bush is president. Gosh, Carl, I had to do something. I told him not to tell anybody. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Could very well be. David, thanks so much. I've got to roll on. I got a big stack coming.
I'm looking forward to this guy because he should be able to walk us through why George should be in the little room with no crayons and no shoelaces. And certainly no people of the opposite sex.
And soft little walls.
Or people of the same sex, for that matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks again.
All right, take care, David. Later. Yeah. And rolling on to Japan, Robert is calling. Robert, welcome to the program. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing today, Bob?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Very good. Nice day today, finally.
Good.
Yeah, I just wanted to chit-chat a little bit about Israel and also the church. I had an interesting experience down in Kumamoto.
Really?
Yeah, it was a church camp. And since I'm becoming a deacon, I had to give a sermon down there. Kumamoto's on the western side of Kyushu.
Mm-hmm.
And the camp kind of illustrated the problem that's what's wrong with the church, and also I think what is wrong with the politics of every country, I think. It's pretty much an old folks schedule, schedule for old folks, designed for old folks, and anybody else we don't care about. And it was really bizarre, to say the least.
But
we ended up at an onsen. An onsen is like a hot spa, hot bath spa, hotel,
mm-hmm.
a public bath. And after we made a couple tours, we did do something good. We saw the leprosy hospital where a British woman, Miss Riddle, set up a leprosy hospital for maybe, the lepers 100 years ago. And then we had a hot bath together and then a dinner. And it was kind of like the opposite. Here we are having the good life. The Christians are having the good life, relaxing, and everybody else is, kind of like suffering. And it was not my image of a camp where you go out and do stuff for the poor or something.
Yeah.
So, and that's pretty much what you see in politics, too, The politicians feather in their own nest and not do anything for anybody. So I ended up eating two things that I've been avoiding for 12 years in Japan because I didn't know what they were.
Okay.
At that dinner. You got your little cultural seatbelt on for this one?
I'm strapped in.
Okay. Well, one is called natto. It's a delicacy for some people here in Japan. It's beans that are literally rotten. If you left beans in the refrigerator for too long, they smell and they're dripping with goo, and you hold your nose to run to throw it to the trash can.
Yeah.
That's what they like here.
Yum.
And,
yum.
Yeah, so this was all chipped up, and I didn't recognize it until it was in my mouth, and I go, oh, my God. And the other Kumamoto delicacy, which was probably in the back of my mind, but I had long forgotten about it, there was sometimes, raw fish is sashimi. We eat that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I have I do it. It's no problem. And there's also slices of raw beef. So beef that's simply just raw.
Yeah, sort of tartare.
Yeah, yeah. And I've done that, too. I mean, in fact, my very first meal with my wife here was in Hiroshima, and we got kind of pointed to this, and we didn't know what it was, and they brought it, and I said, well, bring it back and cook it this time, much to the confusion of the waiter. So I'm eating the beef. I said, I've done this before. I eat it, and my friend, the co-deacon, the only deacon that's a woman in Japan, said, do you know what you just ate? I said, no. And she said, that was raw horse. So, So you're looking.
Oh, Robert, you ate Mr. Ed.
Yeah, I love horses. You know that, And so two taboos I've been avoiding for 12 years I ended up doing. But the next day was even more bizarre. We went to see and we toured an old folks home. So I'm thinking, okay, we're going to do the empty symbolism, strap on the kamikaze bandana and go ahead and do some deadpan duty for 30 minutes for, our yearly show of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Not even happening. They were there just to gawk at the old people. And frankly, we could have left a couple of the members there, too, in my opinion. But it really surprised me that this was the idea of the church camp, and this is what the old people thought. And and the church is in the deficit. It's running in the red, and they're expanding the kitchen. And my co-deacon, the woman, said, if women were in charge, that decision wouldn't have been made, and a couple other decisions wouldn't have been made. And this is what happens when you get a bunch of old men together, and they don't know about finances, they don't care about finances, and they just do what their own crazy ideas get together. So it kind of summed up the problem with the church and problem politics, I thought. So.
Yeah, well, the fact of the matter is that there's, and I mean no offense by this, there's nothing unique in some of what you say, apart from the horse and the rotten beans.
Yeah.
A lot of mainstream Christianity in this country is an aging population. The young people aren't interested. And for that matter, even the Southern. I had an article a month or so back. The Southern Baptist Church is complaining that once they go off to those demon universities, they don't come back and be their fundy selves.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And it's a failure of leadership, and it's a failure of vision, and it's a failure to bring it to life for the next generation.
Exactly, because these old people weren't interested, I think, in reaching out to the young people or doing even having a schedule that was flexible, perhaps. And so it's kind of the chicken and the egg. You're not going to get young people unless you reach out to them, and they're not interested in reaching out, so you're not going to have young people. And so they said, the bishop even said, we got maybe 10 years before the church is non-existent. And I actually give it 5 years before it's really bankrupt. And then you're just left with a bunch of factories and shopping malls.
Yeah.
And so the young people, they have a choice. You either live for your company or you live for yourself. And so we're actually breeding a lot of very self-centered, selfish, materialistic people in Japan that don't give a rat's ass about anybody. And it's really quite shocking. I mean, if you actually see it, because it's in your face here in Japan. So that's, you know, that's the problem I see without some kind of spirituality.
I think you're right, and I think it's a world problem. Now, you mentioned Israel.
Yes, I lived in Israel in 1983. I was running away from Reagan, just bad jobs, bad private school jobs, I should say. And I got into Israel with about $20 in my pocket, and the first thing that I saw when I stepped out of my hostel was lines and lines of buses and lines of people, Israeli soldiers with machine guns, going to fight in Lebanon. And the one thing that really hit me, you know, when I lived there for that year, was the inflation. Every week, prices went up at least one-third.
Jeez.
So, you know...
How do you live? I mean, how...
Well, I lived on a kibbutz, so, you know, socialistic situation. So, you know, I was pretty much taking... It was slave labor, you know. I made $20 a month, but, you know, I had my food, my quote-unquote housing there.
Yeah, had your needs met.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I sort of counted myself, I guess, lucky in the sense that it could have been worse, but... I mean, what do you do with Reagan? And you join the army. That's worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that was the one thing. And the thing I realized is the Israelis are really very irreligious. World War II taught them that God did not exist. Because if God existed, nothing, that would not have happened to them. And so in their mentality, they're going to look out for themselves no matter what. And this has bred a mentality of, I'm going to get you and I'm looking out for number one. And as Guy James said, you know, they have 100 nuclear missiles, and many of which are targeted at European cities, and I'm sure at Arab cities as well. And as he said, you know, there's something wrong with the mentality that if we go down, the whole world goes down. So
sitting in a rowboat on a lake of gasoline and lighting a match.
Yeah. But this whole thing is about getting American soldiers or having an excuse for American soldiers on the border of Syria. In this international peacekeeping thing. So,
oh, there's stuff at work here, Robert. That this is an onion of death.
Oh yes.
Layer after layer of evil.
Yeah.
And the thing is that you can work all the calculus out of it you want to. You're never going to come up with an answer that yields right versus wrong.
No. It goes far beyond that, I think, and it leaves my stomach turning. So.
It does, and I think Greg Palast has it right. If you get a chance, have a look at that article.
Yeah, great. I enjoyed your show last week on that one. That was really good.
Well, thank you. This article now, price of blood in Beirut, $75.05 a barrel. Yeah, it's cogent, and it makes a ton of sense, and Andy was right. Other people have been saying it for a long time. This world's full of Cassandras that no one will listen to.
Yeah, exactly.
Robert, we've got to roll on. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful day. And take care. Look forward to hearing from you again. Bye now. All right. We're going to shoot through the break, and we are joined now by our good friend Rick Goodner, calling from Texas. Rick, are you there?
Hey, Bob.
It is so good to talk to you.
How's it going there?
It's going pretty good. Now, of course, you are the celebrated author of The Fox Syndrome. And, of course, you've appended that with a subtitle, Right-wing media-induced shared psychotic disorder, and that came out, I guess, a little more than a year ago, right?
Just about a year ago.
And they're not getting the right wingers and George Bush aren't getting any saner, are they?
No, far from it.
And just to set things up, you really are an honest to goodness counseling psychologist, boots on the ground, you know, diagnose folks and things like that, right?
Oh, by the state of Texas, they say I have the legal right to do so. So I get out here and play with it all the time.
And so, and I mean, I don't mean to make light, Rick, but you see the stuff that is described sort of sterilely in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, fourth edition. You see that in its real life manifestations, correct?
Coming all the time. It's so easy, especially if you know you can watch them from a distance. And it's not a hard thing to do, Bob. You know, you can actually do the diagnosis yourself. It's very simple. I have a book that may or may not be coming out at the end of this year. It's So You Want to Be a Psycho.
You know, I can always count on you, Rick. Yeah.
And in it, it teaches you how to find out if Aunt May is really crazy or not.
Well, you know, that might that I can see where that could be valuable to people.
You'd really be surprised. I can walk you through it here in 5 seconds.
Okay.
And show you exactly how you can diagnose somebody. Pick somebody, any world leader.
Well, I've built you, and we've built this up. We're going to start at the top or the bottom, depending on how you like to look at things. Let's go straight to dear leader, George Bush.
Dear leader. Okay, let's just take 7 little bitty criteria and see if you can place any of this, any information on it to see if he meets any of these criteria.
Wait a minute. Okay. I'm under the gun here?
You're under the gun.
Okay.
You're going to do it. You're going to do it or not do it.
Okay.
Either way. Ready?
All right.
Failure to conform to social norms with respect to lawful behavior as indicated by repeatedly performing acts that are grounds for arrest. You can throw in there impeachment if you wish.
Okay, so we've got a couple of DUIs.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a buried cocaine scandal.
Absolutely, that's even admitted to.
And I don't know that this is necessarily, maybe you've got another axis for this or something, Rick, but... what about the whole business of stuffing M80s up frogs' butts and lighting them to see them?
Oh, isn't that kind of a... I wonder if you got a sexual gratification from that. That would really put it into a weird feel.
Yeah. what about branding pledges with white hot wire?
There you go.
I mean, so
homoerotica.
Yeah. I think so. So, I mean, have we filled out that first one?
We've got that one. That one has been met without any trouble at all.
All right.
And especially seeing how some of the things you have mentioned happened before the age of 15. That's important. Okay, next one. Deceitfulness, as indicated by repeated lying, use of aliases. I don't know if he does that. Well, maybe. Conning others into personal profit or pleasure. For pleasure.
Okay, does he have to use the aliases on himself, or is this like when he calls Karl Rove Turd Blossom?
That's pretty good. I like that. Usually it's on himself. He pretends he's something he's not.
Oh, like when he calls himself W.
Yeah, there you go.
Or when he calls him... Oh, wait a minute. Okay, you'll get down with this, Rick. When he calls himself a Texan.
Absolutely. Here he is, a Canadian Yankee. A Connecticut Yankee, which, you know, there's no problem with that.
No,
as long as you call yourself that.
Be what you are.
He is certainly not a Texan, never has been, never will be. Okay, how about repeated lying?
God, where do we start? Saddam has weapons of mass destruction. Saddam was involved with Osama bin Laden. Saddam had something to... Saddam was behind 9/11. Let's get mundane, Rick.
Okay.
Tax cuts. We need tax cuts to slow down this blazing fast economy. We need tax cuts to speed up this stagnant economy.
That's repeated lying. He meets that one, without a doubt.
Okay, so we're all over that.
So we got two.
All right.
Impulsivity, failure to plan ahead.
Bring them on.
Bring them on. And no plans for winning the peace?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, mm-hmm. Reckless, the next one, reckless disregard for the safety of others.
Well, is this where we sort of double back onto the DUI?
Absolutely.
How about the incident where he, and I mean, we're not talking about, you know, these aren't apocryphal tales, Rick. I mean, these things are detailed. They're in writing. The account that Laura gave about when he drove his car through the living room plate glass window, because she said that his speech on the stump when he was running for Congress was a little something less than Demosthenes.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, his speech is getting a bit blurred here lately. Have you noticed?
I've noticed it a bunch.
Kind of makes me wonder if he's back on the bottle again.
Or something.
Or just continuing.
It depends on which bottle. You know, the old Overholt or the loading up on the bottle of Xanax.
You know, it can be legal. The same thing. Okay, he meets that one without a problem, too. Consistent irresponsibility is indicated by repeated failure to sustain consistent work behavior. Honor financial obligations.
Okay, everything he's ever touched in his life has turned to caca? Arbusto Energy, Spectrum 7, Harkin, the Texas Rangers. Enough?
Yeah, no, that's Matt. No problem with that one.
Okay.
Lack of remorse is indicated by being indifferent or rationalized in having hurt, mistreated, or stolen from another.
Okay, do that again.
Lack of remorse as indicated by having by being indifferent to or rationalizing having hurt, mistreated, or stolen from another.
You know, I said that I would never that I would never go into deficit spending unless it was a case of national emergency, war, or a recession.
Mm-hmm.
Lucky me, I hit the trifecta.
Which, by the way, he didn't say to begin with.
Right.
Right. Okay. How about, okay. Let's see, rationalize and hurt others. You know, we've got to go over there and get democracy for these people if we have to kill 18 or 20.
Well, or the question, how many people have been, how many civilians have been killed in Iraq? I'd say 30,000 or so.
Give or take.
But we're bringing democracy. Democracy is just around the corner.
You do a real good fake accent, just like him.
Oh, that's scary. Leno, okay. Here I come.
That was 7.
Okay, we're at 7.
And 7 is the list. All you have to do is hit 3 to have this disorder.
Now, wait. Okay, so we haven't identified the disorder yet.
No. Nope,
I have no idea what I've just diagnosed him as.
Absolutely not. Now, did you say that he's probably met it and how there's only 3 that he has to meet, and he met 7?
I'd say he's a lead pipe cinch.
Absolutely. Sociopath.
Huh?
A criminal.
No. When we say sociopath, we mean monster, don't we, Rick? I mean, we mean Jeffrey Dahmer.
We mean Jeffrey Dahmer has a psychopath. That's what I'd call Jeffrey Dahmer. Sociopath is what you normally have in prison. It's full of sociopaths. And then, you know, the word they try to use now in kind, light society is antisocial. To me, that means someone doesn't want to talk to somebody. So I don't use that very much. I use sociopath or psychopath.
Okay.
But what you have here is criminal behavior, and all you have to do is meet 3. And I think you just diagnosed your job.
We just dropped a hammer to the tune of 7. I mean, that's is that what
seven, like, 7.
Is that like axis 1, 2, 3 kind of?
That's axis 1 all the way through.
Oh, my God.
You've got a complete personality disorder. And I kind of thought that, you know, you might be able to come up with a few on that. Because he has, like you said, this has been demonstrated, it's been written, it's in public, it's everywhere.
Well, now let's back up for a second, Rick. You said it's interesting that he manifests some of this behavior before the age of 15. What is the significance of that?
To actually have the diagnosis, the person has to be at least 18 years old at the time that they're diagnosed.
Okay.
But they need to have a conduct disorder before the onset of age 15. Now, at that time, he was fighting in the family. He chased his brother Jed up a fence, tried to kill him after Jed won a game of tennis, tried to beat him to death with a tennis racket.
Mm-hmm.
So this behavior has been going on for quite a long time. And he is our leader.
Maybe yours, brother.
You know, I'm really glad. I've listened to you yesterday, and I like how you're not letting these three pigs off the hook. They're screaming now, we're not neocons, these are neocons, we're not Republicans, Bush is not a Republican, I'm a Republican, I'm not anything like him. I'm sorry, this is what they have wanted. This is what they have set up.
Well, that's diagnosable behavior too, isn't it, Rick?
Oh, absolutely, but I'll try to let everybody else diagnose each other once they get the book.
Okay. But I mean, you know, we get personal, you know, we need, you know, George Bush calls a woman who got the wrong leg lopped off and wound up losing both legs or got nearly killed in a mastectomy negligence incident by a doctor. And he's got, you know, we need to let the gynecologists of America practice their love. You remember all that?
Yes.
And he refers to that as winning life's lottery when you've been malpracticed on.
Yeah. So you just lose a leg and you get a few $100,000 and you're set for life.
And it's when you know it's when we sue the corporate corporations that are out there butchering us, then we're well, you need to take personal responsibility. But I'm Rick, I'm tired of it. I mean, I want some. It's time to impose. I mean, impose some personal responsibility on the Republican Party.
Absolutely.
I mean,
it's time for us to quit letting them off the hook. They have made this mess. The whole party, every one of them who has voted Republican, has set us up for this disaster that we're in, and they need to take personal responsibility for it. I'm certainly not going to let them off the hook.
Well, you know, they had the. I feel like maybe I'm getting kind of broken recordish, and I apologize if I am.
Sorry.
They've got the House. They've got the Senate. They've got the executive branch. They've got a whole bunch of freaks on the judicial branch, and I'm not just talking about the Supreme Court. I'm talking about goobers like Janice Rogers Brown, all the way down to the clowns galore. It's like the little card in the center ring of the circus. They just keep coming out.
That really upset me when the Democrats rode over and allowed them to come through. They should have filibustered. Have screamed. They should not have allowed any of that to happen.
Yeah, because in the long run, you know what? We're going to have the majority back in the Senate at some point. And if it's a Senate without a filibuster, I frankly look forward to the weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth as the Republican minority sits in its sackcloth and ashes, Rick.
Yeah, but I don't think that will happen. They will filibuster. They're not going to follow the rules. They never have. Why should they now? What really surprises me, you were talking about the mentality of people who voted for this. It's really strange. It's almost like a disorder in itself that I hadn't found a label for yet, that people were actually vote against their own best interests for the strangest reasons. I mean, I have never...
Well, isn't it sort of political masochism?
Well, yeah, it's kind of like the French Revolution... inverted. Instead of chopping off the heads of the aristocrats, they're pushing themselves back into poverty and making the laws that so the aristocrats can start in America and to be again. They're fixing it. They vote against abortion, and what they get is tax breaks that allows people who have never worked in their life to continue to never work. Makes no sense to me. And those are American values? Strange.
Yeah, well, I think it's beyond strange, Rick. You were talking about hearing the show last night. This lady from Gent, West Virginia.
I heard that.
You know, who invented a whole new country, the country of Bumbia.
Bumbia.
And I was later informed by our friend Jim that it's one of the old papal states. But,
I figured it was the location where all the bums lived.
But the thing is, I went through that, and I did that and presaged it by mentioning, you know, we think we've got them on the run. We think we've really got them going now, that they know that we're after them. We've got the meat axes out, and we're coming. Pitchforks, top of the hill, castle, can't miss it. But it turns out I got done with the show last night, Rick, and I got this story from editor and publisher, and maybe you've already heard this today. If you have, you've already had your day ruined. If you haven't, I'm going to ruin it now. Here's the headline. Harris poll, half of Americans still believe Iraq had WMD.
I can't believe that. I mean, it's amazing. How can half the people still be that stupid? No, they're not stupid. Go back to Fox syndrome. Delusional.
Yeah, delusional. Despite several years of official and press reports to the contrary, which ain't necessarily true, a new Harris poll finds that half of adult Americans still believe that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction when the United States invaded the country in 2003.
And nobody's came up with it.
No, but here's the weird part. I mean, here's the part where you wonder where the Kool-Aid's getting put in the water supply. This is up from 36% last year.
Now, that
now, Dr. Goodner?
I had no idea. No. Fox's viewership has been going down. I can't see people getting stupider. But obviously they are. Unless the poll was taken with just a certain amount of people.
It was a poll of one, I mean, a standard polling procedure. 1,020 adults conducted July 5th to 11th, and it's got a margin of error of 3 percentage points. So,
and how was the question asked?
That part I don't have.
Because any question can be asked in a certain way to elicit what you want to hear. You would never crush puppies, would you?
No.
No. But if you had two choices, only two choices, you can put your foot into a shoe with broken glass and a rattlesnake, or the other shoe has a puppy in it. Which one are you going to do?
I'm crushing me a puppy.
There you go. See, well, if they ask the question that way, they can get the answer that they want.
Well, this is just fascinating stuff. In another finding widely diverging from most expert opinion and media reports, again, that's BS, Rick, the media reports part.
Right.
Harris found that 64% said Saddam Hussein had strong links with al-Qaeda, up from 62% in October of 2004.
You know, I don't know this Harris report, but I will check in on it tonight and see what I can find out and get back to you, because this just doesn't sound right.
But then again, you know, look at the Lebanon and Israel thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't find Democrats. You can't. Nobody out there is willing to say that someone should put the brakes on Israel and try to achieve peace. Condoleezza Rice was sent, as I noted earlier in the evening, she was sent specifically to Beirut with only one goal, and that was to make sure that peace did not break out.
I can kind of see it with the wingnut. They're expecting Armageddon. They want the war to start there. They want it to go to Syria. They want it to go to Iran. And then they want, you know, everybody to gather up at Megiddo. And, you know, Jesus comes back and
the blood runs.
Liberals burn in hell.
Yeah.
You know?
And suddenly everybody's playing that Left Behind game that's coming out.
Right, right. Well. Yeah, well, that's another novel I've been working on, my first novel.
Well, you know, since we've mentioned it, what kind of, I mean, okay, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my particular cup of tea, but it's, you know, it's sort of a kill everything kind of game.
Right.
But what happens when you take something like that, Rick, and you impose a religious code on top of it?
Gotcha. What's happening, what I see happening, is that, okay, unions are wonderful things. I wish I was a member of a union. Can't be, of course.
Mm-hmm.
They have always been wonderful. They have helped America. We got a five-day work week. We've got 40 hours a week as opposed to what free markets was making us do before. And plus our kids at 14 don't have to be out working 14-hour days. But people have... I think I just thought I got a phone call just then. I had to look at it, and I kind of lost what I was saying.
That's okay.
What was the premise again?
we were talking about...
Sometimes I have emergency calls, and I have to look at that.
Well, I understand that. No, we were talking about this business of you know, the religious video game, kill everybody.
Right. Okay. Ready. Now, all of these the unions have done good things, but now the right wingers have turned us against unions, turned a lot of Americans against unions. The unions are at the best interest of America. We at one time had class warfare, and that's what kept America with a middle class. To be honest with you. I mean, I hate to use the word warfare because I don't like wars of any kind.
But it was the middle class literally fighting.
To get to the middle class.
Yeah, and to survive as one.
Absolutely. And so what has happened is that Falk, Limbaugh, and the others have convinced middle class people that there is no class warfare, and there is. There always has been, always will be, or else we're poor. It's one of the two. You don't only have those choices. You know, you have class warfare or you're back into poverty. So we have a group of people now who are no longer voting for their class interest. The Republicans have been able to change the subject to value is interest. And so everything in the world is a value question. And this is what our voting public is doing now. They're no longer voting for their own financial interests or for the class structure or for getting out of poverty into the middle class. They're voting for values because they believe that the Republican Party are going to stand for values. Of course, they don't. They just believe in free enterprise for the rich and famous. And that is the big problem that we have. That's
well, isn't that partially our fault, Rick?
It's totally our fault.
Oh, okay.
Because we allowed them to change the subject.
Well, we're trying, you know, little bitty radio network. We're trying to change it back. We're trying to change the conversation. We're trying to change the paradigm. We're trying to offer people an opportunity to say what needs to be said because the American people, Rick, are the experts.
Absolutely.
And frankly, they don't need a good talking at. They need a good conversation with.
Absolutely.
Because we're aching to talk to one another, and it breaks our hearts that we feel like we can't because we've been told that, you know, you're this or you're that, and we can't seek common ground. We can't do any of that kind of thing. But the fact, I look back to the rise of Limbaugh, and yeah, you can say, okay, it's the fairness doctrine and it's media ownership rules and all of that stuff. Okay, it is. But the fact of the matter is, all these activist groups stood on the sidelines and said, well, would you look at that talk radio? Have you ever heard a bigger bunch of nimrods in your life? Who would listen to the likes of Rush Limbaugh? And while they were sitting there giggling, union membership was going down.
Absolutely.
And down and down.
And then once they got the membership down, it was easy to tear it apart. And
right.
the only way really that we're going to get back to the point that we need to be, and right now we're almost back to 1900, union membership has to grow again. They're the only thing that made the middle class in America. And I don't care what anybody says, it wasn't people starting their own businesses. It wasn't anything other than union workers who made America's middle class what it was.
Precisely. Precisely.
And I'm not a union member. I don't know any union members. My daddy was a farmer. He wasn't a union member. So this is just what I've seen through my years.
But, yeah, but the fact of the matter is, if you come from a farming background, and especially, you know, Texas out that way,
mm-hmm.
The Grange movement of the early 1900s
oh, yeah.
was tied in very tightly with labor.
Mm-hmm. And the Democratic Party.
Yes.
But we allowed them to change the conversation. We allowed them to take away the class issue and put in a moral issue, a value issue.
But with fake values.
Fake. It's fake. It's all fake. None of it's real.
You know, snowflake babies are not more important than real babies.
Well, it might be whenever I see the Bush daughters having a couple or five. Sorry.
Yeah, that aren't. Yeah, right. And yeah, there's a lot of that I'm just going to leave alone.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether or not, well, look at this thing going through the House and the Senate. Makes it a felony, you know, sort of like the Mann Act, makes it a felony to take a minor female across state lines to procure an abortion without parental consent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they actually had a debate on the floor, Rick. It was brought up, I think it was Dianne Feinstein, actually, who asked the question, what about the victim of incest? And the proponent of the bill, John Anton of Nevada, stood up and said, well, once that's reported, the child can be taken out of the home, and then you will have judicial review of whether or not she can have an abortion.
You know, having talked to probably 1,000 victims of incest, maybe just hundreds, I don't know. After a while, it starts to feel like thousands. That is not an option. They are scared to death. They are controlled. When you finally get to them, they're usually out of the situation because they have grown up, and they married out of it, and they're still screwed up for life. And, yes, they do have babies. I have met patients who have children of their father, who have had the children taken over by the mother, and suddenly they're the aunt of their own children. I mean, this stuff it makes no sense. It's not reality.
No,
you have to look at the reality of the fact that incest does happen. Rape does happen. And it certainly happens in places where there is sexual, oh God, I don't even want to pent-up sexual energy because they're not allowed to express it in a healthy way. So what do? They pick on their kids.
Weirdo religious cults. And,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very much the religious group. Wing nuts, it happens all the time. You'd be surprised how many people I have talked to. Oh, yeah, I went to church, and, yeah, I got this and this and this. Different people. I hear it all the time. I tell my daughter, don't ever let your kids go to church if you don't want them molested.
Yeah. I mean, we had to pull our kids out of the local congregation because there was just too much weird crap going on, Rick.
It's amazing.
And, you know, they fight amongst themselves. They're, you know, brothers and sisters. And, you know, they on any given day, they'd just as soon kill each other as look at them. But, you know, you get them out in the wide, wide world, they're well-behaved. And the first person that raises a hand to one or the other two are on them.
Absolutely. Normal kids.
Thank God to hear that. When do I get the bill?
You're not going to get one. Sorry. your bill is that you're going to have to take care of them for a few more years.
Isn't that the truth? But in all seriousness, this stems from a discussion about values, Rick.
Values.
And it is not a value. I mean, these are not the, you know, the state of Washington held today in their Supreme Court that two guys can't pick out monogrammed towels and get married. Because, and I mean, I printed out the opinion. I got it right here in front of me, Rick. It says, because the state of Washington has a legitimate interest in promoting procreation and child rearing. That's the rationale for not letting gay people get married.
Now, they did this in a country where we're in the middle of two wars, probably three, possibly, maybe, for sure, three.
Maybe four.
That's going on. And the economy's falling apart. Government's basically being dismantled. And the biggest thing that they can deal with is monogram towels.
Well, no, I mean, that's...
Zero? Is he fiddling?
Yeah. I mean, I'm facetious. We're worrying about Steve and Fred picking out a China pattern. But, I mean, this is fiddling while Rome burns, isn't it?
It is. There's so much that needs to be taken care of, but let's talk about whether or not two people who love themselves wants to get married. I could care less. It really matters not to me. Even when I was a teenager, it didn't matter to me at all about gay people because, you know, there's more girls for me.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of how I felt in the theater department at dear old WVU.
Ah, you were a smart man. I never got into the theater.
Hey, Rick, we haven't talked in a long time, and I just want to tell you what a pleasure this conversation has been.
I always enjoy it. It's always good. I'll try to call you back if I ever have anything to say again.
All right, anytime. You take care now.
And hopefully I'll make sure I turn off my cell phone next time so I don't lose my train of thought.
Don't you worry about it. And please let us know if and when the new book comes out.
Sure will.
All right. Thank you. Take
Bye-bye.
Care, Rick. Bye now. Our good friend Rick Goodner from Texas. Mighty smart man, that Rick Goodner. And I highly recommend a read of The Fox Syndrome, Right-Wing Media-Induced Shared Psychotic Disorder. I mean, you know this book has got to be good. It'll take me just a second here. You know this book is going to be good when you see Wingnuts reviewing it on Amazon.com. Let's see if those reviews are still up there. I have a feeling they are. I don't have time. But you can go the review. Just another left-wing screed attacking our dear leader. Yeah, this is how things go. All right, let's go to the phones. Luke is with us. Luke, welcome to the program. I'm sorry you had to wait.
Oh,
man.
That's okay. It's fun to listen.
I really don't aim this at you, okay?
Well, you know, it's like saying it's what you're talking about, Rick. It's the mob mentality. You know what I mean? It's like the hand of the pitchforks and the torches. That's about as good, you know. It's like they think, well, I'm part of the group. Yes, yes. Everybody, we all think the same thing. It's like, well, let's all think we can breathe underwater. Let's all go play in the lake. Come on.
Well, you know, I was listening to Bruce's program before mine, and he had this clip. He had one from Jack Van Impe.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. Does the same thing to me. And then he had one for a geography lesson from Pat Robertson. And, you know, you talk about the mob mentality. I mean, this is, you know, this isn't the gathering together of the saints. This is the gathering together of the imbeciles.
It's like, it's visitor's day at the asylum. My gosh, isn't that nice?
And let's see, over the American Family Association, they're all mad at Chuck Schumer.
Uh-oh.
Because, you know, Chuck Schumer, I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
But he came out and said that religious fundamentalists in America are as dangerous, I'm paraphrasing, are as dangerous as the terrorists overseas. And, you know, I think I'm going to even quit talking about terrorists.
Well, it's one of those things. It's like say every time they start mentioning terrorists, we go, yeah, did we ever get rid of those Christian people, you remember, or something about Oklahoma City? You know, I'm just curious, when that happened, how many churches did we get to bomb?
Yeah.
You know?
I know. But they're calling on Chuck Schumer to publicly apologize to the Christians of America.
As soon as Pat Robertson does.
Yeah, you first, Pat, building your mall.
Or let's see, what is it these days? Do they still have Tim and Tammy Faye's old place,
Heritage USA?
Heritage USA, that you can still go up and ride the slide every once in a while.
Riding the slide for the Lord.
But let's get on to some different things.
Yeah, go right ahead.
I love the thing that I listened to earlier about y'all talking about Honda and GM. It's like deja vu all over again. It's like, guys, it's the 70s.
This is 1973, and you're putting out lead sleds and
and Honda's putting out these CVCCs and the Civic.
Yeah.
That essentially, I got thinking about it. You know what that old CVCC looks like now?
What?
I can't think of the name of it. The new one they've got now. The one from the Italian Job. You know, the little cars?
Oh, yeah.
I can't think of
the Mini Coopers.
Mini Coopers. That's what those things remind me of now.
Yeah, I remember those old Hondas.
I had a girlfriend had one, and I say it was the old thing for police academy. Let me rip out the front seat, and I'll just sit in the back. Oh, leg room. She had one. It was opened up the glove compartment, so I got a place to put my feet.
But that's where it all begins there. It's and people bought them. Meanwhile, you know, sales of the like was mentioned earlier, sales of the Tahoe are up.
Well, I was telling Agnes when we were talking before. I said, you know, this documentary thing's coming up in a couple. It's already out, but it'll probably get to us in a month or so. I thought I sent you the thing on the thing with Alexander Paul about the electric cars.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like that. California was actually doing something about this 10 years ago until GM got involved and said, kill it.
Right.
So they take, what is it, 6,000 cars that are leased because they will not sell them and take them and they go crush them.
And there are still people who miss their little electric cars and miss them badly.
Well, you saw that thing I gave you, said a while back about the Smithsonian. They had one there and took it out.
Yeah.
Because this movie's about to come out. They took it out and put a hybrid car in place of it. It's one of the few, what they call it, EV1.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it was one of the few left, you know what I mean. And they took it out of the Smithsonian and put it back into storage.
Kind of reminds you of the whole Tucker torpedo a little bit, doesn't it?
Oh, gosh. It's like, you know, the Tucker was not a great thing, but, hey, it had some innovative ideas. And like I say, it may not have survived, but at least some of the things that came from it did. You know, I mean, wasn't the Tucker the one that had the headlights that turned with a wheel? I believe it was one of the things.
Yeah, that was the Tucker.
And, you know, now that's one of the things that they're selling on one of these new cars. It's like when you turn, the lights pivot with the wheels.
Exactly. And over in Great Britain, we talked to Andy in the UK a little bit earlier. The Royal Auto Club has come out and slammed a bishop. And told the bishop that religious leaders should stick to what they know best, because the senior bishop suggested that driving an SUV was a symptom of sin. And the thing is, he's right, because this was the Bishop of London, Luke.
Yeah.
The Right Reverend Richard Sharp said the purchase of large cars was an environmentally selfish choice.
Yeah.
And he said, people have an overriding imperative to walk more lightly upon the earth, and the Royal Auto Club told him to stuff it.
Oh, David was talking to you earlier about Larry Moe and Curly.
Yeah.
they're after Corker now, and Brian and Van Hillary were on him about, because he dumped like a million something more of his money into his campaign. And I'm sitting there going, gee, I hope somebody pulls up and sees what you guys, when you were in Congress, what you voted for about that public financing of elections. You know?
Yeah.
Every time one of them complains about that, I'm like, yeah, how did you vote on that? You know, were you leading that charge?
Big old crocodile tears.
But
yeah, I kind of wish. When's the primary down there?
Well, they're doing early voting right now. The primary is in about a week, I think it is. I'm not going to check the exact date.
Because I'd really like to keep these three clowns going at each other as close to November as possible, so that Harold Ford Jr. can just sort of whistle right past him and into the Senate.
Oh, I tell you what, it's like you say. I'll send you some more stuff on him. It's just a comedy routine. It's like, you know, the blue collar comedy tour. Oh, we got that beat down here, I tell you. I tell you one thing. I still wish that y'all. I know you're still looking for somebody to make you the rubber bricks.
Yeah.
But I hope somebody down the line will put out a bumper sticker, that thing that you used to say, you know, that Bush vote, how's that going for you now?
Yeah.
I really think that would be a good bumper sticker.
We've got, you know, it's just a small organization, Luke, and
I know.
You know, I'd love to print those bumper stickers. I mean,
I tell you who you ought to talk to is maybe get in touch with a Bart Cop or somebody along those lines.
Well, Cafe Press is out there. I guess if there was a market, we could probably go and design them, and if there's a market for them, people could buy them.
You know what I mean? Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, maybe you ought to do something like that. Maybe run it through somebody like a Bart Cop or somebody, you know what I mean, who runs that kind of stuff all the time. That might not be a bad way.
Yeah, because, you know, his worst president ever T-shirt is just going great guns.
Well, and you all see people with a picture, you know, with his little Bart Cop insignia thing.
Yeah.
All over the place.
With the hammer, sure.
Well, it's top of the hour, Bud, so let me let you get out
all
here.
Right.
I know you
Luke,
go,
thank
go.
You for waiting. And
no problem.
I appreciate it.
All right.
You have a good night.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
I love it. You guys watch the clock more closely than I do. Agnes, let's give a listen to the news and come back. And, Lordy, I've still got a stack. This is the Head On Radio Network.
She crawls on her belly like a reptile. Just one thin dime, one-tenth of a dollar. Step right up, folks. I went and bought myself a ticket, and I sat down in the very first row. They pulled the curtains up, and when they turned the spotlight way down low, little Egypt came out strutting, wearing nothing but a button and a bow, singing,
This is the Quality News Network. Israel suffered its heaviest casualties today, the 15th day of fighting, with 9 reported deaths. Hezbollah fired more than 100 rockets into northern Israel, wounding at least 31 and damaging buildings over a large swath of land. Meanwhile, Israel fired 24 strikes today, including one that hit the offices of Hezbollah's commander. 13 people were wounded, including 6 children. An Israeli official reported 30 guerrillas were killed today, but Hezbollah has not confirmed whether anyone was killed. Dozens of Iranian guerrillas are reportedly headed toward Lebanon today to join in the fighting. Iran says it will not send in regular troops, but won't stop volunteers. They're expected to arrive in Lebanon sometime this weekend. U.S. and European officials met in Rome today to talk about the Israel-Hezbollah conflict. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice says they agreed to send a U.N.-backed international force to southern Lebanon and to continue sending humanitarian aid. But she opposed calling for a ceasefire, saying that it would not lead to a lasting peace. In Israel, the military is investigating yesterday's deaths of 4 UN peacekeepers. A preliminary report says that UN observers called the Israeli military repeatedly asking for an end to the airstrikes. The report says that each time, an Israeli official promised the bombing would stop. In the Gaza Strip, 23 Palestinians were killed today in Israeli strikes. At least a dozen militants are among the dead, as well as a three-year-old girl. It was the deadliest day of fighting since Israel's withdrawal from the area last year. In Washington today, a House committee approved a bill that would prohibit Indian tribes from building casinos off their reservations. Tribes can now do so with the approval of the Interior Secretary and the state's governor. In Washington state, the state Supreme Court upheld the 1998 Defense of Marriage Act, which limits marriage to a man and a woman. 45 states now have laws in place banning gay marriage. An Ohio Supreme Court ruled that a Cincinnati suburb that wanted to use eminent domain for a multi-million-dollar commercial project. And Chicago is now the largest city in the nation to require large retailers to pay a livable wage. The city council approved a measure that requires those that make more than $1 billion each year to pay at least $10 an hour and $3 in fringe benefits. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
A federal judge has dismissed a lawsuit filed against AT&T. It aimed to stop the company from providing its telephone records to the government, but the judge ruled that that would damage national security. The Securities and Exchange Commission voted today to require more disclosure about executives' pay and perks, as well as the dating of options. It's the biggest change since 1992. The House is expected to vote on a measure to roll back estate taxes and extend tax breaks for businesses, education, and research. That vote is expected to come this week. And the Senate is expected to begin debating soon whether to open 8 million acres of the Gulf of Mexico to oil and gas drilling. A final vote could come later this week or early next week. GlaxoSmithKline says it could produce hundreds of millions of bird flu vaccine next year. The vaccine has been effective in clinical tests but still needs regulatory approval. General Motors reports a second quarter loss of just over $3 billion due partly to its restructuring program, but its sales were up 12%, causing its shares to rise. ConocoPhillips reports rising oil prices lifted its second quarter income by 65%. The $5.18 billion figure far surpasses Wall Street expectations. Light sweet crude settled at $73.94 today. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 1 point, NASDAQ down 3 points, S&P 500 flat. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Wow, this one's had wings. Somebody greased the rails for this prayer meeting edition. 7 minutes after the hour. Well, we got about, 45 minutes or so of conversation opportunity left in the evening. I'm Bob. You know that. Agnes is at the controls. And I'd like to... I mentioned something in our conversation with Luke. And that was this business with Senator Chuck Schumer. And I think it deserves a little bit more in-depth analysis. And here it is. A religious leader is demanding an apology from U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer after remarks he made amid Senate wrangling over embryonic stem cell research. During the recent bioethics debate, science versus not science debate, Schumer launched what some viewed as the journalistic cheating. Of course, this isn't exactly journalism. This is from the American Family Association. The Reverend Donald Wildman. That's how you cheat. You see, some people said, and if that includes the person writing and some other freak, you know, that's some people. Schumer launched what some viewed as an offensive tirade against people of faith, calling those of deep moral and religious beliefs a bunch of theocrats. Now, see, who are trying to force their beliefs on the rest of the U.S. But Rob Schenck of the National Clergy Council says the senator's tirade did not end there. Quote, he's not just saying that we're all a bunch of nutcases and dangerous, but in the same breath he talks about the taking up of arms against us. We're going to be persecuted. Just today a heathen brought me a cold cup of coffee. Oh, Jesus! That's outrageous for a United States senator, and he ought to apologize immediately. He has no right. He says that people of faith have no right to be citizens, that in fact we're on the order of the kind of terrorists we see in the Middle East, and Americans ought to be taking up arms against people like us. It's an extremist position if there ever was one, and it's intolerant. They're persecuting us. Next thing you know, we'll be lampposts outside the Capitol. With our nasty, sizzling fat popping, you know, as it lights the way on the sidewalks, just like it was in Rome under Nero. It's the tribulations. Oh, where's the rapture? Jeez. You know, this guy thinks he's being persecuted while at the same time, the U.S. Secretary of Education is promoting legislation that would provide vouchers to low-income families with children in failing public schools, giving the children of these families the financial means to attend private schools or to receive other educational services. Yeah, they're being persecuted, all right. The legislation introduced by Republicans in both houses of Congress, how did we know, would provide children in poorly performing schools with funds to attend the private school of their family's choice or to get money for additional tutoring. U.S. Education Secretary Margaret Spellings says poor families deserve the same choices wealthy families have. That's right. Wealthy families send their children to private schools where they can learn that 2 + 2 equals a miracle. A miracle called 4. Brother. So there's your persecuted Christianity. A full frontal assault by the United States Department of Education on the public school system. Ah, Bob, they're government schools. Don't you listen to Neil Bortz. That's what he calls them. He calls them government schools. Well, apparently they're doing listen to this. This is where you're the United States, humongous deficit, $40,000 just to get born in America. That's how much the debt of a baby born right now is. Under the America's Opportunity Scholarship Act for Kids... Under the America's Opportunity Scholarship for Kids Act, Byzantine language, Spellings says that states could either seek up to $4,000 in funding for students to attend private schools or up to $3,000 for students to participate in additional supplemental services. Meanwhile, you've got the National Education Association and the American Federation of Teachers out there on the front lines of this debate. Because they know what it means. They understand. It's not just about job security. It is literally about the children. Because guess what? there's a new study out. Sure enough, it turns out that the little Fundy families and their little Fundy children aren't doing so well. Aren't doing so well in their testing. This new department, at the same time they were announcing this foolishness with this voucher garbage, it turns out that according to the testing that has been done, children in public schools do as well or better than their religion industry school counterparts in math and reading. And that's because if you go to one of these Fundy schools, you really do. It's algebra is a miracle. Pythagoras was a secret Christian, and that's why you can do a triangle that way. Let's go to the phones. We're joined by Roy, a friend of our good friend Rick Goodner. Roy, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
How are you?
Well, I'm doing fine.
Welcome aboard.
Good.
What do you, got anything in particular on your mind?
Oh, I just, any kind of bush bashing that you're doing, that suits me just fine.
You know what? You have no idea, Roy, how valuable it is for folks to hear that coming, from accents like ours.
Yeah.
Because, you know, America has been conned into believing that, once you get south of the Mason-Dixie line, it's all one big George Bush fan club. I trust that you're here to tell us it's not.
It's not. It's not. And there's a lot of people, you know, Texas has got plenty of crazy people in it. But there's a lot of people in Texas know and have known for a long time what a lot of the people are waking up to in the United States today, like 70% of them. They're still at 30%, but
they may be a little hard to sober up yet.
Well, they're going to be hard to sober up, sure.
But, well, now, I've forgotten. It seems like a million years ago, Roy. How many years did you guys have to suffer through George Bush as governor of Texas?
About six.
And you're certainly paying the piper now, aren't you?
Yes, and we did then, too.
How so?
It was just a carbon copy of what's going on now.
Well, I mean, your educational system down there is a wreck now, isn't it?
Well, under Ann Richards, it was always billed and showcased as one of the greatest in the United States. Soon after Bush took over, bam, last I checked, it was number 48 out of 50.
That's a long, fast slide, isn't it?
That's a sad slide.
Well, what about your state government? Are you operating in the black?
No.
No.
Nah.
Didn't think so. Well, how about human services? How about, for little children that can't get to the doctor, that kind of thing?
It's the same as all over the United States.
Do you sense a groundswell of disgust with George Bush? I mean, is it possible that getting rid of this kind of thinking could start where it sort of came from?
I'm not sure. There's so many people that just absolutely cannot stand to admit that they were wrong in backing this guy. And, you know, I've said since day one, he did not win anything. He stole Florida in the year 2000. Now he stole Ohio in 2004. And he hadn't won nothing. But there's a lot of them that they voted for him and praised him. And so many of them all, they said, oh, my God, we can't have another Clinton. My God, he got a blowjob. Well, you know, they say, we've got to have a Christian in the White House. Christian my foot. How many Christians can you, someone show you in the Bible that goes around lying, jumping on a country that didn't do nothing to us? And what have you? It's just a never-ending cycle.
Well, how's Georgia's little war playing out down there these days?
In Iraq?
No, yeah, the Iraq War. How's that playing in Texas?
In Texas, they don't want to talk about it. They all love Fort Hood, Texas, down there.
Mm-hmm.
And they just don't want to talk about it. They don't want to hear about it. You don't get them to email back and forth anymore about it. You know, if they've got something they can blame on Bill Clinton, they'll blame Bill Clinton. But not George boy. They just can't handle that Bush bag.
Well, it seems like they're going a little quiet on us, but even talking to Rick, you know, that's that study that came out that says there's still 50% of America who think that Saddam was sitting on big old piles of weapons of mass destruction. That scares me a little bit. I thought we had him on the run some.
Well, as I haven't seen numbers where 50% think that they were still in WMD over there, but I do not know. I mean, the main thing that I watch is I watch CNN in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
I like to watch Hardball on MSNBC and Keith Olbermann. And the last 2 days, Chris Matthews has just about done about faith and yesterday, he literally said on the air that the media is to blame for this Iraq mess because they should have questioned the Bushies and the neocons harder back in 2001 and 2002 before this thing ever started.
But Roy, does that ring a little bit hollow to you?
Yes.
Because, I mean, wasn't Chris Matthews one of the ones who was beating the drums and rah-rah and going to war?
Yeah. Or,
I mean, I think he was, wasn't he?
Yep. And then today, he said he had a probably about 10 or 15 minutes on. He had John Harwood with the Wall Street Journal. He had Howard Feynman on, and another guy. I didn't catch his name. He wasn't somebody I see very often. And they were talking about, here's the image of a broken man. And Chris Matthews said, you know, he's not going to get by with that. The United States is not going to put up with a leader that don't look like they're in charge. Well, this is the same thing that's been going on all of his life. He ain't never touch anything if he didn't screw up.
That's right. From childhood forward, he has been a lifelong failure, hasn't he, Roy?
A teetotal failure.
You know, and I think about the people who, you know, where they built that new Texas Rangers stadium. What is that, Arlington?
Arlington, Texas.
How many people did they dispossess to build that, and then got the taxpayers to foot the bill?
They got the taxpayers to foot the bill, and you know, you could go down through Arlington, Texas today and try to talk to someone about that. They don't want to talk about it.
Just kind of avoid, you know, ignore past mistakes and perhaps they'll go away.
I guess so.
But they're still paying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dolly Moses. Well, I tell you what, Roy, I hope we'll hear from you again sometime.
Well, I'll do this and I don't know. It's just really crazy.
Well, you know, there's archives of the program, and you know, tell your friends and neighbors that there's a healthy welcome place where folks with opposing views to George W. Bush can come and not get screamed at. We're out there on the internet every night, and you know what? It makes me double proud, Roy. It makes me double proud to know that. That there are folks like you and folks like Rick down there in Texas.
Yeah.
I got buddies in Alabama. You've heard, I mean, we've had Tennessee tonight. there's a turnaround coming.
Well, it is. It is. And I think it will eventually get here. But, boy, it is long overdue.
It is indeed. Thanks for fighting the fight, Roy.
You're welcome.
You take care now.
Goodbye.
Bye now. Roy from Texas. And, of course, we've got other friends down there as well. There's a book out there, and I think I mentioned it a few nights ago. Our good friend Mark Levine, who's on from 2 to 3 Eastern here on the Head On Radio Network. If you've not listened to Mark, you most assuredly should. Mark is mighty smart and not afraid to ask hard questions. He interviewed an author of a book called Whistling Past Dixie. And that interview really, really made an impact on me. Because this guy, I mean, he's a Democratic strategist. And I couldn't disagree with him more. Because he advocated this position that the Democratic Party should continue to try to get, you know, that there are votes that are easier to get than others. And that somehow, maybe I'm misinterpreting him, but being a Southerner myself, I was just grievously disturbed by it, because he said that the Democratic Party doesn't need the South. And I hate to tell you, but that is a surefire recipe to lose another election. And you know what? I'd like to be clear on this. If somebody was out there writing books saying that, well, you know, we can avoid, you know, we can give up. We don't have to campaign in Kansas or Missouri or Iowa or Illinois or Kentucky or, you know, pick a, you know, we don't have to campaign in Montana. My reaction would be the same. My reaction really would be the same, because either we are a union. You ever notice how the Republicans just hate to refer to the United States as a union? They've had their little language lessons. Not going to talk about no unions. But if we are going to be a union, then we are all going to have to be Americans. And when one political party that says, well, you know, there's just not enough voters to make it worth trying in Mississippi. Texas is a foregone conclusion. It's not worth the effort. Well, you know, until Tom DeLay got away with his sleazy little redistricting plan, Texas had a Democratic majority in the House, in its House of Representatives seats. That's worth remembering. It was it didn't take a black box. It took one man with absolutely blind, poisonous political ambition to advance himself and his filthy lucre causes above the needs of voters in Texas. And poof! How many votes went away? Because, you know, you take a little core of African-American or Hispanic voters and you put them in a district where you're absolutely certain that they're going to be vastly outnumbered by all the lily whites. And bang, you got yourself a Republican majority. And, of course, those upstanding racists like Alito and Roberts and Scalia and whatever you want to call Slappy Thomas, said, fine by us. I don't even know why you're bothering to count the Negro vote and the Mexican-American vote. Why would you want to do that? Yep. So, I don't know. You know, in many ways, call me crazy. Okay, Bob, you're crazy. I think the votes that are most worth fighting for are the progressives in places like Texas and Oklahoma Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia. Because when you, history has taught us, when you empower people like that, in that fashion, you can change things. The abolitionist movement wasn't born in New England. The abolitionist movement was born in the hills of North Carolina and East Tennessee. The voting rights movement, the same place. The labor movement, the Ruther brothers, who changed life for people who built cars for GM and Ford. Man, they weren't from Detroit. They were boys out of the hills of Appalachia. They were men out of West Virginia. So I'll not be part of any argument that says my brother and sister progressives and liberals in the South and in Appalachia and in the so-called flyover country are not worth speaking for. I'll have no part of that. We'll take a break. When we come back, your calls are welcome. And, there's a couple more stories to be done yet on the list. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell.
Despite the early retirement buyout deals accepted by thousands of workers at Delphi, the struggle that unions are waging with the auto parts giant is far from over. Talks are still underway between Delphi, the UAW, UECWA, and GM about the labor contracts that Delphi wants to throw out. UAW says Delphi must honor the contracts and come to an agreement with its unions, or there could be a strike. The next bankruptcy court hearing for Delphi is set for August 11th. At least 2,000 temporary workers have been hired by Delphi to replace those who were bought out. They'll be needed until Delphi finishes its bankruptcy plan of wiping out some 25,000 U.S. jobs and closing most of its U.S. plants while producing its parts in cheap overseas labor markets. The rank-and-file group Soldiers of Solidarity wants the temporary workers at Delphi made permanent, and the group plans to pick at Delphi headquarters on August 11th.
With oil prices at record levels, a five-week strike by oil workers in Norway has come to an end. The more than 2,500 workers, represented by the Norwegian Oil and Petrochemical Workers Union, signed off on a two-year agreement that secured a 5.9% pay increase. Mediation with the two sides took more than a month. Of the more than 2,500 workers, only 87 were on strike, affecting three of Norway's oil rigs. However, the union had threatened to send more workers to the pickets if an agreement could not be reached. Norway is the world's third largest oil exporter behind Saudi Arabia and Russia.
The New Orleans Worker Resource Center, created by the Laborers Union and SEIU, is offering Katrina victims job training and placement in New Orleans. The laborers will train workers in construction, demolition, and mold remediation, SEIU, in home health care and nursing.
It isn't time to toss back a cold one just yet for employees of City Brewing Company in La Crosse, Wisconsin. The workers rejected a three-year contract offer from the company by 2-1 on Sunday. City Brewing is in the process of purchasing Pennsylvania-based Latrobe, and those workers signed off on a two-year contract over the weekend. The new contract for La Crosse workers included changes in pension, wages, and insurance. City Brewing workers are represented by the Teamsters Local 695. The union says part of the reason for the contract rejection could do with uncertainty over the proposed Latrobe plant purchase. Their contract expired in May.
Here's today's economic report. U.S. Labor Department says job growth for June was the third straight month that job creation fell short of economic forecasts. Job growth averaged 108,000 a month over the past 3 months. What this means is that job creation in the U.S. isn't even keeping pace with population growth. Meanwhile, sales of existing homes are also down for the third straight month. Realtors say it's officially a buyer's market amid other general signs of an economic slowdown. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bruce Burke's radio program, weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m., connecting people.
Listen, not only we have the founding fathers and mothers, now we got the founding sisters. Don't forget about that, sir.
It's Wicked Witch of the North, huh, Peter?
Jim, I'm the Wicked Witch of the South. Glad to meet you, buddy.
Well, listen, I think for the emails, you haven't replied.
Dude, I replied to your email. I told you that we wanted to have you in chat.
I can't do it. They won't let me in.
Oh, please.
Is this a good idea?
You're a real, both of you are a total cap.
Bruce, I love you more.
Uh-oh. Oh, my God. Oh, I'm going to have to retreat to my Barbara Cartland novels and my box of bonbons.
Oh, God, the world's first bitch fight on internet radio.
This is great. This is great. So, do I have to flip a coin, or what's the deal here?
Don't miss Bruce Burch, weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
I met an onion grower today at the airport when I arrived. And he said, you got to help me find people that will pull onions, pluck them, or whatever you do with them, you know.
Welcome to Wednesday Night Prayer Meeting with your host, Brother Bob Kincaid. Put your hands together, raise your eyes to the light, and welcome him. The truth will set you free. And now, here is Brother Bob Kincaid.
Oh, jeepers. I didn't know that was coming. Lay your hands upon your computer speakers, brethren and sisters, and feel the power flow through. Can you say hallelujah, hallelujah? For only $9.95, we'll send you a personally autographed prayer bar towel. How's that? All right, 24 minutes before the hour. To the phones. Jim is back with us. Hey, Jim, welcome back.
Oh, hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm well.
A final thing for your Wednesday night prayer meeting. You know, I have never, well, let me put it this way. A lot of the stuff that these, a lot of things that are a part of Christianity. And I'm not a cafeteria Christian, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You accept it or you don't. We've talked about this before.
Right.
And the idea of having a new earth where there are no more fears, no more suffering, and no more pain. It's a wonderful thing. It really is. It's a wonderful vision. And I can understand why so many people could be looking forward to an existence like that. Particularly when they have gone through a life in this world that's so filled with tribulation, disease, hunger, want, injustice, man's inhumanity to man. And that's one of the things that attracts me to Christianity. And, you know, I'm no theologian. I don't make any pretense of being a Bible scholar. And I just accept basically the tenets of my faith as a small child. And, I hate the fact that there are people who are misusing the doctrines of Christ and his words and teachings of the apostles and the men who followed him, the good men, not the bad men. Because he spoke of those, and he spoke of many people who would say all kinds of things, and they would be basically counterfeit, airsoft.
Yeah.
Fake.
Well, I mean, can you imagine it, Jim, this bill that's...
As far as the concept of what I've said earlier about the new heaven and the new earth, it is more than beguiling. It is appealing and, in many cases, very comfortable. And I say that in all sincerity and in all honesty from my heart.
Well said. Well said. But, you know, it's these people who do pervert it and just make mockery of it, Jim. It appalls me, this bill about not taking the parental notification before a child can, you know, literally, you know, a young woman can be taken across state lines. You know, in states like Mississippi where, you know, it might be easier to go to Memphis than all the way down to Jackson.
Well,
after an incest pregnancy.
Incest and families and things like this. This is just horrible. And this has no part in Christianity. This has no part in any type of even sane legal framework as far as I'm concerned.
Well, but the thing is, people who are calling themselves followers of Christ are the people who are pushing that law.
I know, and I think to a great extent they are misguided.
Well, is there a point in time for you, Jim, or is there a tipping point where you can say that these are not, I mean, you will be comfortable saying that these, you know, these people aren't misguided. They are simply not followers of Christ. They're not Christians. They're monsters. I'm not challenging. I hope you understand.
I understand that. But I think once they have the opportunity to realize that they are misguided and they refuse to turn away from that, then they have in fact, you know, to err is human, to repent divine. But to persist is devilish.
Well, then, can we say that these people are devilish? Then they've had ample opportunity.
I would dare say that these people who make their living and who attempt to use something which is a very beautiful thing, in which, you know, according to our faith, God Himself came down and died on a cross for our sins. And if they want to misuse that and pervert that for their own selfish earthly greed, then I think they're going to have a very rude awakening one day and a very, very, very disappointing time.
Well, what scares me, Jim, what bothers me, what scares me, terrifies me, you know, pick a word, is, you know, they're going to have that rude awakening someday. Someday they're going to have that come up, and somehow... But it's the mischief that they can make in the here and now, Jim.
Well, you know, Bob, that's been spoken of. I mean, how many people have taken, I mean, even in my own church, even in the mother of my own church, there have been so many things wrong and so many horrible things that have been done in the name of Christ.
And how many people have sat silent while those things were done?
Has had to apologize time after time after time. Because of errors in church doctrine and the people that were hurt because of it. I mean, this isn't new, my dear friend.
And of course, and the Bishop of London gets told to sit down and shut up by the Royal Auto Club because he dared suggest that there might be a little bit of selfishness involved in driving a behemoth of an automobile when it's only, you know, you and your husband or wife and one kid. He gets told us.
That's a good example of that's just wrong, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you know, we don't need to. We were given this earth to make something of it, not to destroy it, and not to be proponents of those people who say, "Oh, man can't hurt anything," because he certainly is. And you know, that's just something I just wanted to say. This personal
Well, I appreciate that, Jim, and I thank you for sharing it with us.
And, you know, I don't like to see it, and I think it does a lot of harm. And, then, of course, you know, these things were foretold that there would be people like this.
Yeah, false prophets.
Exactly. And that's what I call them, false prophets. And the lead, and the people who follow them, I hope, will realize them for what they are and turn from them.
Well, I wish I had that soundbite of Pat Robertson giving the geography lesson with the Gogs and the Magogs and the Gomers and the Goomers. I'm sure you heard that today on Bruce's program.
All that's been, you know, you can, you know, the Bible is such that you can go through and you can pick out any part of it and prove anything and set up timelines and things like that. And Gog referring to Russia and Magog referring to, I don't know, the Northern Confederation, this, that, and the other. I mean, you've had people who predict, who've done this stuff since, oh, the Millerite, for one, and who were some of the others who made these predictions, but, you know, and acted like they knew when and if, when it was coming and this, that, and the other. But, you know, according to the dictates of my faith, there's only one entity that knows when and if that time will come, and it certainly isn't any man, not even the angels in heaven. Nobody knows, but God.
That's what we're told. Jim, thank you very kindly.
Well, I just wanted to add that, you know, I realize I say a lot of things that are off the wall and stuff like that, but that's something I really mean from my heart, and that's something I truly believe in.
And I can tell that you do, and we thank you. Jim, have a great evening.
Thank you.
Bye now. Jim referenced being able to take things and make out of them things that... It amazes me, and I think it's so important that we pay attention to a man like Greg Palast when he says that what's going on in Israel and Lebanon is being played out as sectarian religious violence. But the fact of the matter is, it's about the oil. Because frankly, I can't see, and maybe you can, I can't. I can't see something worth fighting over in, you shall not let your light, this is Leviticus. Is this, now I'm going to read this. You tell me, is this worth dying over? Is this worth even fighting for? Leviticus chapter 19. You shall not let your livestock breed with another kind. Huh?
What,
Edith? The cattle are getting it on with the horses? I've been around, you know...
Froggies and birds, they all want wings.
Yeah, the froggies want wings so they won't bump their little butts on the ground when they hop. You shall not let your livestock breed with another kind. You shall not sow your field with mixed seed. Now wait for it. Wait for it. Nor shall a garment of mixed linen and wool come upon you.
Oh, the polyester gene. Oh.
Now, so we got cattle, grain, and fabric. And verse 20 is, whoever lies carnally with a woman is, and who is betrothed to a man as a concubine, and who has not at all been redeemed nor given her freedom, for this there shall be scourging, but they shall not be put to death because she was not free.
What?
So you can rape a slave woman, and you'll be told, naughty, naughty, naughty. Bad tribesman, bad. Shamey, shamey. That's worth dying for? This is what the religious freaks want to put back in my children's classroom? Well, we need to teach the Bible as literature. No! No! Let's see. And the Lord did so. Thick swarms of flies came into the house of Pharaoh, into his servants' houses, and into all the land of Egypt. The land was corrupted because of the swarms of flies. Mercy. You know, that's Exodus. and Leviticus, and the don't eat, no shrimp on the Barbie for you children of Israel. This is worth dying for? Or killing for? Or teaching as literature? Most of this is ripped off from the Code of Hammurabi in the first place. Holy cow. I mean, wait a minute. More rules. You shall not shave, guys, listen up. You shall not shave around the sides of your head, nor shall you disfigure the edges of your beard. You shall not make any cuttings in your flesh for the dead, nor any tattoo marks on you. I am the Lord! Oh, we need to teach a Bible as literature class, Bob. No, we don't. This is not literature. These are the ravings of pre-literate wandering tribesmen. Oh, what else? This is the one that you never hear beaten on. This is Leviticus 19, verse 33. Wonder how this would play out in the Israel-Lebanon thing. Wonder how this would play out in dropping bombs on babies. And if a stranger dwells with you in your land, you shall not mistreat him. The stranger who dwells among you shall be to you as one born among you, and you shall love him as yourself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. This is something to die for? No. 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 Let's go to the phones. Wayne is with us. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the program.
Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm doing great. You?
Good. Real good. Well, I was up until a little while ago.
What happened?
Well, I had a meeting, Democratic Executive Board meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And, come home, figure, well, good, at least I get to hear, hour and a half or so of the show. And then I got a call from your new production guy.
Yeah.
You got to give him a serious raise, man. I'm going to tell you.
I'll tell you what. I'll give him half of my salary.
Okay. Well, something's got to happen here. He ran out of gas.
Oh, no.
So, Dad's, old generous Dad goes, gets him and, I said, here, take a credit card, fill it up, bring me the receipt. $95, Bob. $95.
What, has this thing got, like, twin tanks?
No, I mean, we got 30.66-something, We should have had another, six, because it's definitely the devil's work here. That would be George W. Bush.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. But
well, did you see this Greg Palast article I was talking about a little bit earlier?
For today?
Yeah.
No.
It's brilliant. It is simply brilliant, Wayne.
Well, I got to...
He says, there's no oil in Lebanon, there's no oil in Palestine, there's no oil in Israel, there's no oil in Gaza. They're fighting over the only land in the Middle East that absolutely has not a drop of oil under it.
Huh.
And he says, you got to wonder why. And he says, well, George Bush could stop it. Ahmadinejad could stop it. King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia could stop it. But none of them are stopping it because every time another rocket goes off, the price of oil goes up, and guess who benefits? Ahmadinejad, Abdullah, and George.
There you go.
Jeez, I think we got
them. I mean, there is a method to their madness,
More than method. This is all worked out.
Oh, yeah, believe me. I'm sure it's all in the, all in the papers for what? What is it? The New America Century?
Yeah, the Project for a New American Century.
Yeah, Project for a New America Century.
I kind of like the old American Century one.
I kind of liked it myself. But talking about that at the Democratic meeting, I got a new bumper sticker.
Yeah?
You'd really like it. It's got GOP,
mm-hmm.
The elephant.
Yeah.
And the elephant trunk transforms into a gas pump nozzle, and then it just It has GOP on the elephant with the gas trunk nozzle. And then it says the Grand Oil Party. It's a nice sticker.
How true it is.
Yes, Grand Oil Party. I thought it was...
But, you know, they're having their little Klan meeting down in Charleston, probably even as we speak. I don't know. George Bush likes to get to bed early. Maybe he's already left Charleston.
Oh, I'm sure he has. He's got, you know, they've got lots of sets of them footy pajamas on Air Force One.
Oh, sure. And, so, yeah, and the second all to get him off to dreamland, too.
There you go. But, you know, he could just, you know, go right to bed.
Whole bunches of America-hating West Virginians down there paying $4,200 for a pair. So they could doing a heck of a job, Georgie.
I had a meeting yesterday with West Virginians United.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of different groups involved, you know, peace groups and veterans groups and union groups, and AFL-CIO is involved. And, you know, we're having this big thing on August 26th, Take Back America rally down in Charleston.
Yeah, I think we might even be there.
Yeah, well, and I certainly hope so. It's going to be a good thing. I think it's going to be a good thing. One of the groups is having a bean dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And the admission to the bean dinner, instead of $4,200, is $4.20.
Beautiful.
Ain't that, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty good. Thought that was pretty clever.
Well, you know, I would rather have $4.20 from 10,000 people than $4,200 from 100.
I would love to know who goes to these things.
I don't know.
You know, wouldn't it, you know?
I mean, Don Blankenship, I guess.
Oh, I'm sure he would.
The guys from International Coal Group, the ones that were on the camera during the Sago disaster, I'm sure they were there. Heck of a job, Georgie, with that whole MSHA thing.
Must have been an act of God. Lightning. There had to be lightning somewhere.
Yeah, God always takes the rap for the mean stuff.
Oh, yeah, he does. Yeah, he does.
Doesn't he? Never gets credit for the sunrises.
No.
I've seen some pretty nice sunrises.
So have I. Sunsets included.
Yeah.
You know.
Those, nah, not so much with God. The lightning strike.
The sticker comes from moveon.org.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So.
Well, you know, a suggestion was made earlier in the program, Wayne, that maybe we go to Cafe Press and design some bumper stickers that say, Bush voters, how's it working out for you?
I would definitely put that on my vehicle. You know, I've asked one or two of them. Some of them get a little angry and... Other ones don't have too much to say.
Yeah, they just kind of stare at their shoelaces. And
you know, the look in their eye is, damn, I forgot to take that thing off.
Oh, that's coming off next time we go through the car.
Yeah, exactly. But.
Well, man, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about the gasoline.
Listen, man, I just, you know. Figured I'd bust your butt a little bit over.
Yeah, well, jeez.
Not your fault, my good man.
He should have said, tell him to say something. If he ain't got any gas in the van, tell him to say something.
Well, you know, he thinks, that, you know, listen, I asked him before he left, you got enough gas? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, that's one of those lessons learned.
Well, what are you going to do? It's, you know, we might as well learn to live with it because, you know.
Yeah.
You ain't never going to see no lower gas.
Ain't going to be no dollar a gallon gas anymore.
No, there ain't. You know, $3 is, you know.
We're going to look
you know,
back.
I mean, it's just what, you know.
We look back a year from now, we're going to have $3 a gallon gas. I like that.
Oh, man, hey, go down here. They got it for $3 a gallon. What a deal. You know, they know how to train people.
And we're jumping right through the hoops and standing, sitting there with the little ball on the end of our nose, aren't we, Wayne?
Yes, that's exactly right.
And you are being told, my friend, to get yourself into the chat room. You are missed.
Well, I will do that immediately.
All right. Good enough.
Okay, man. Good talking to you.
Good talking to you, too. We'll see you Sunday.
Okay, man. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Me, too.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Party at Wayne's house. Big Democratic reunion party. Three county Democratic committee party. Out at Wayne's. It's going to be fun, too. Going to be some somebodies there, too. Not just little old talk radio people. All kinds of nice folks. Thanks, everyone, for joining in and sharing your time with us this evening or tomorrow morning or whenever you're listening to the archive or the podcast. I hope you all know how much we value the time that you share with us. The show tonight, of course, was produced by my darling wife, Agnes, announced by Brian Reznor. John Fox is the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. He's in Sydney, Australia. Peter Godbold of Godbold